RacismDaily.com, your number one source for global news reports on race, racism, and overt actions of white supremacy. From Asia to the Americas to Europe to Australia to Africa, racism is not a thing of the past. It is our current reality. Be informed. Be globally informed. You should be the first to know. RacismDaily.com, RacismDaily.com, RacismDaily.com.
Is racism hurting you? On issues of race, are you unable to speak, think, and act with clarity and confidence? Are you tired of laughing when nothing is funny, smiling when you are not happy, agreeing when you really disagree? CounterRacism.com, you can learn specific strategies and techniques to counter the behaviors of the people who practice racism in all areas of activity. Using words correctly, following counter-racist logic, even counter-racist science projects designed to reveal what racism is, how it works, and how to counter it. The open source code writing format allows you to pick and choose from a variety of counter-racist suggestions so you can produce the code that works for you. Stop by counterracism.com today and help replace racism with justice.
That's counter-racism.com.
Do you need a one-stop shop for all of your multimedia needs? Triumphant Multimedia is a skilled team of professionals with a passion for great marketing and chic design. Our specialties include consulting, brand development, copywriting, and creative graphic design that's second to none. We also offer photography, photo retouching, videography, and video editing. At Triumphant Multimedia, our goal is to provide highly effective creative solutions built to suit any individual need or budget. Give us a call at 678-732-8067 or check us out online at TRIMultimedia.com.
Hi everybody, welcome. This is Justice with the Cows Radio program. If you want to learn about, understand, and counter racism, white supremacy, be sure not to miss a Cows episode. We keep them jammed packed with constructive information to sharpen your use of words to help eliminate the system of racism, white supremacy, ASAP. Also, for more information on racism, white supremacy, and to invest in my counter racist efforts, please visit my blog. JustDoJusticeToday.blogspot.com.
You're just saying just buckets and buckets of words.
Now, the cops may soon have facial recognition devices in their hands. Julia Angwin has the story. You wrote this with Emily Steele.
Yep.
And of course, it impinges on privacy, or that's
my
the worry.
Topic.
It is your, and that's related to privacy too. So let's talk about this. Things like this that you might be able to use as a facial recognition device. What is it? How does it work?
So essentially, what we wrote about is a new device rolling out. It attaches to the back of an iPhone. Eventually, could it maybe attach to a BlackBerry, but first it's the iPhone. And so it's about this thick, and it fits on the back. And what it allows you to do is take photographs of people for recognition purposes. So you can take a photograph really close up like this of your eye. And the iris, the colored portion of your eye, is like a fingerprint. It's like a unique identifier. Only you have it. And so this device can basically identify your iris. From 5 feet away, it can take a picture of your face.
But isn't the facial, the bigger piece, the facial recognition, isn't that notoriously unreliable?
Yes.
Because people put on weight or they take off weight and men grow beards.
That's a great question. So facial recognition technology has a really bad rap, and for good reason. So right after 9/11, a bunch of people rolled out facial recognition technology right away, and they were all like spectacular failures. In the Boston Logan Airport, for instance, they put in some cameras, and they put in pictures of employees just to see if the cameras could recognize those employees walking by. they couldn't recognize any of them.
And that's people they already knew.
Yes, right. So it really was a total disaster. But interestingly, in the past 10 years, a lot has changed. So the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which is NIST in Maryland, has been running these competitions to improve the accuracy of facial recognition technology. And they say that the facial recognition technology is improved by a factor of almost 300 since then.
Well, that, I mean, that's pretty good, but it was starting from a low base.
Yeah.
I mean, not being able to identify people they already knew.
Yes, right.
Right.
Agreed. So it has come a long way. It may not be as far as it needs to be, but it's definitely far enough that now people are using it with the iris. So when you have both, you're pretty confident. So it's like with augmented, and even with the facial recognition technology, if you have a very small subset of people that you're looking for, it's actually better. Once you get into like a larger database, it gets harder.
Like all the people going through JFK. Now, whenever you write a story, there's usually a privacy angle, it seems. Are people up in arms about this? Are some people up in arms about this from a privacy standpoint and a civil liberties viewpoint?
Yeah, I mean, there's some concern because this is the first time we've really seen this kind of handheld device being rolled out domestically. Right now, it's being used by our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan to identify insurgents. But when you bring it into domestic situations, people are concerned about being surveilled or monitored wherever they go. So the law is kind of a gray area. Right now, there's no case law about like when it's appropriate to use facial recognition technology. So most of the police departments that we talk to that are getting the device said they're only going to use it when they have reasonable suspicion of criminal activity.
Okay, and so that's like the same standard for getting a warrant, is it, or is it a similar
standard? No, it's lower than that.
But it's a similar idea.
It's like you have to basically try to have some evidence.
Okay.
You don't have to have the full everything nailed down, but you have to be able to convince a judge that you had some reason to do this.
And this, and from your story, this it could be like in police forces across the country, Arizona to Maine. I mean, that's a lot of police forces.
Right. Well, nearly 40 law enforcement agencies have signed up to get the device when it comes out in the fall. So we'll see how many of them actually
These are quite a lot of money, actually, right? They're $3,000 apiece.
Yeah,
that seems like a lot of money for something that's that big, right?
It is and it isn't, right? I mean, if you get one of these devices that they use in airports in Europe, that's an iris scanner that's like $30,000 for a giant machine this big. So by the standards of, this world, it's actually kind of like the low end.
Okay, very interesting story. I urge everyone to look at Julia and Emily's story online. The device raises fear of facial profiling. That is the headline. Thank you, Julia.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another program to share constructive information on racism, white supremacy, what it is, and how it works. That audio clip that you just heard, Dr. Cambon shared that with us, and quite timely given our recent broadcasts, which have focused on enforcement officers and their murder of Mr. Kenneth Harding, 19-year-old black male in San Francisco, the continuing abuse of Mr. Oscar Grant, about a year and a half after his murder at this point, and still getting new information about how white people mistreated him. I thought that was quite timely, new technology that white people are cranking out to surveil, monitor their victims. Again, Dr. Cambon, looking forward to having him back on the program immediately. That's it. Our broadcast today. Looking forward to having Brother Polite back on. This will be his third visit to the context of white supremacy. He's authored a plethora of books. You can visit his website to get more information, 2012stores.com. Again, 2012stores.com. Visit the website, and check out his books. I really appreciate any non-white person under white supremacy. You go to his page, front page, you can look down at products that you can get, first aid kits, understanding we are at war. This is terrorism. You saw the evidence. I think a lot of people have seen the YouTube videos and footage of what happened to Mr. Harding in California this past weekend. So the address again, 2012 stores.com. 2012stores.com. I'm going to play a quick audio clip and double check, see if we can get our guest with us for the evening. Just reminding folks of the brutality that enforcement officers have dumped on us. Yeah, I played this audio yesterday, and I think it deserves to be replayed given what's happened and given that we are still heavily confused about the most constructive way of dealing with white supremacist enforcement officers.
They done killed this man. Oh, my God. They done killed this man. Oh, my God, he got to be dead now.
It's like assassination by video.
Justice for Ayanna Jones. The banner was flown over Detroit on Monday. The plane traveling between her former home on Detroit's east side and the prosecutor's office and police department downtown. 1 year after her tragic death at the hands of a Detroit police officer, no one has been charged.
Don't forget your nigger knocker.
I'm very lucky to be alive today.
Louima sat down with us this morning on Good Day New York, and he talked about moving forward after his incident and how it sent shockwaves throughout the city. Four white police officers beat and sodomized the Haitian immigrant inside a bathroom in the 70th precinct in Flatbush, Brooklyn.
One of the major complaints that has emanated from virtually every urban black community in the nation regarding police treatment is that the police, because they are racist and bigoted, are disrespectful, crude, and brutal towards black citizens. Many emotionally unstable whites are attracted to the job because the authority that is characteristic of the police role affords an opportunity for them to act upon these prejudiced, sick attitudes.
The cop, they said, pushed her against the wall, and her son was on his back at the time, and he raised up and asked, "What are you doing to my mom?" And the officer shot him while he was on the ground.
The car belongs to the Tolans. It wasn't stolen. Police say Robbie Tolan and his cousin were unarmed. As for the officer who shot him, he is white.
Well, in California, a white California transit cop who shot and killed an unarmed black train passenger is now a free man, and a judge's decision to let him out of prison early sparking some new protests. Well, a jury sentenced 29-year-old Jahanz Messerly to 2 years in prison for the 2009 New Year's Day shooting. But last week, a judge released him after he served a mere 11 months.
The way we interact with police, I think, it seems like we really don't understand when we come in contact with enforcement officials what white supremacy means, that you are in a vulnerable position as it relates to white people. You have a lot less power than the white army anywhere in the world, anywhere in the known universe. And we seem to demonstrate that in a real pitiful manner when we come in contact with enforcement officials. Could you share your view on that?
Yes, and it's codified too, exactly how you should act at all times without exception, and that is comply, both by word and deed. Do what you're told. Get out of the car. I don't care what kind of names they call you and all like that. If you're told to get out of the car, get out of the car. If you're told to put your hands in there, put your hands in there. If you're told to halt, halt. I mean, these demonstrations after you have been killed make no sense at all. Shot in the back of the head while running, while fleeing. And woe is me. Police brutality over and over again, decade after decade. Stop playing. There's nothing to play with. Put your hands on top of the car, put your hands on top of your head, drop to your knees, whatever you're told to do for a very logical, and I'm going to emphasize, logical reason. You're in a vulnerable position. You're not in position to show opposition. And when you think that you're in position to, 99 chances out of 100, you are going to lose big time. Now, we haven't learned that by now. then we need to take some more lessons and have what I'm saying now repeated over and over and over and over and over and over again until it sinks in. Because of what? The evidence. The evidence shows that running down the highway with a helicopter overhead usually gets you nothing. Stolen vehicle. Barricading yourself in some type of house or hut. And talking about you not coming out. The record shows you come out, dead or alive. And then people gathering around, throwing themselves over caskets over and over again, photograph after photograph. Mothers, aunts, cousins, homeboys with plenty of dreadlocks and tattoos, throwing themselves over Catholics, over caskets, coming by an open casket, rest in peace, on the fence, teddy bears, candle lights, speeches about something got to be done about it. Stop playing like you're tough when you're not. That's the message. You're a prisoner of war. Act like one. Name, rank, serial number, hands in there. You've been captured. Don't act like you haven't been. They've already got a make on you. Already got your fingerprints. You've already been computerized for life. Don't play like you have some kind of secret army, because you don't. You're alone. Three sets of blinking lights. Get out and do what you're told. And no lip. None. Prisoner of war. Show some intelligence. But even as I speak now, there's somebody out there who isn't. Driving down the highway 40 miles an hour, driving up in people's yards and all like that. You're going to be dead in the next 5 minutes. And the report's going to say, it looks like he was going for a gun. You already know that. Why act like you don't? Everybody out there who's doing that kind of stuff, who's within the sound of my voice, that's who I'm talking to. You know the routine. Don't play like you don't. We play too much. Play, play, play. Everything is a movie scene.
Very serious. About nothing. About not being very serious.
You haven't done anything? What are you running for? If you have done something, what are you running for? How far you think you can run? To the moon?
Police say they're looking into what happened, but deny any kind of racial profiling.
Don't forget your nigger knocker.
Context of white supremacy. Especially fitting, I have all of the information that we've had from our guests in the past 24 hours. Civil rights attorney Mr. Philip Horn, Oakland Fire Department paramedic supervisor and instructor, Mr. Sean Gillis. And on yesterday's broadcast, San Francisco Bayview Black national newspaper publisher, Mr. Willie Radcliffe, all giving a ton of information on racism, white supremacy, specifically in the Bay Area. I will just reiterate, it was very difficult seeing the recent news footage of the protests in San Francisco over the execution of Mr. Harding and hearing black people shouting black power. It was very difficult to hear that with yet another black male shot in the middle of the street, broad daylight, and, you know, nothing to be done about this. Oh, well. High fives all around by enforcement officers on video. context of white supremacy. And hopefully people who listen to this program will understand this is what should be expected as long as the system of white supremacy exists. This should not be a surprise. You should not be stunned. I can't believe this happened. 2011, President Obama. If you have heard more than 20 programs of the cows, you should not be saying any of that. It should be, yep, as expected. This happens every day, all the time. This further evidence, system of white supremacy. Again, we're going to have to change our conduct. And again, I would suggest check out those documentaries from the suspected racists at flexyourrights.org. I think they have a lot of useful information on what to say, what to do when interacting, having contact with enforcement officers. They have different vignettes, what to do if you're stopped by enforcement officers in your home, if you're out and about, if you're in your vehicle. Lots of great information. You can watch both documentaries for free on YouTube, and you can go to their website to get more information, flexyourrights.org. The founder of that organization was on the program July 2010. It's in the archives, and I uploaded it at TalkShoe as well. Check out that program. I think it has a lot of information. Could save your life if you are a black person, you have contact with enforcement officers. That said, it seems Brother Polite is not with us on the line. I tried to give him a call. I was not able to reach him. I sent him an email, and we will see. He's a black person, so, you know, things do get hectic on the plantation. I will wait, see if he's able to dial in. I will be truthful. This is the third program that we've done in 24 hours. Actually, less, third program in 23 hours. So I'm on fumes a bit. Also contributing to that, it broke 80 degrees today, and it's never 80 degrees in these parts of Washington State. Was out at the beach. It was great. Was able to get some sunshine, some vitamin D, trying to fight off scurvy. But I was out, got some of that great sunshine. Looking forward to being outside again tomorrow. It should be beautiful weather, hitting the beach again. Oh, Justice is on the line. Justice, if you're with us, your line is open.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, yeah.
I was telling the folks I was a little distracted. We've been doing a lot of programs, but then the weather is really nice, and just had to run in from being out in the sun to prepare for the program. Have you been enjoying the weather?
Yes, I have.
Before I get too caught up in the weather discussion, I will double check, see if we have a caller, just to make sure we're not missing our guest. Non-member, person who called in as a non-member, is this Brother Polite by chance?
No, this isn't.
Oh, okay. Thank you for responding. Beautiful. All righty, back to the weather. So you've been enjoying the weather, Justice?
Yes.
Outstanding. It's been great. It's been great. Wish we had a bit more warmer weather out in these here parts, but I will enjoy it at least for these 2 days before it goes back to usual. I played a news article, but if you have a news report, I guess you could share that as well. Other than that, I will check with listeners if they have anything they would like to share. Did you by chance have a news report to share with folks for today?
I do, but I have to look up the pronunciations for the words. If you can give me a moment, then I can read it.
Take your time. She's been out enjoying doing constructive things for the summer. Folks missed Justice's presence here on the cows. Good to hear her voice again. We should have time. You can, you know, don't feel rushed to get to the article. You know, take your time. Yeah, I'll double check the folks that have called in that are on the line. I know folks were all eagerly anticipating hearing from Brother Polite. I'll keep my eye on the switchboard to see if he dials us in. If you are on the line and you have any thoughts to share, let me know and I can open your line up. I normally have ideas or a few things I'd like to get out, but I feel like we've been on the air a lot the past day or so, this week in general, so I don't really have anything to say other than reiterating that it was very painful to hear black people shouting black power a few yards from where a black person was shot down in the street. And I can't even say shot down in the street like a dog, because white people do not treat their dogs the way they treat black people. I don't think white people would allow a dog to lie in the street and bleed to death the way that they did Mr. Harding. So I can't even say that they treated him like a dog, treating him worse than they do their dogs. Yeah, other than that, I don't have an immediate thought. Other than and reiterating what we heard from Mr. Saltzman earlier this week, the suspected white supremacist who did the documentary film Prom Night in Mississippi, that should not be anything that people let slide. When you hear folks saying that, we got some black racists, black people, or any of that sort of talk, that is a major act of racism, white supremacy, major. If it's a non-white person, they're confused. I used to be one of those folks. And hearing white people say that, that has a huge impact on other victims, because they just pick that, suck that right up. Yep. You got some black racists, and then they go filling in, you know, whatever they need to. In Mr. Saltzman's case, yeah, a black person 50 years ago, yep, they cursed at me. That's black racism. Get out of here. Just remind folks that is not anything that, you know, should just be allowed to slip through. That should be challenged, questioned, examples of questions that you can ask. Please, what do you mean when you say racism? And get the person to explain. How do black people practice racism? And get the person to explain. I especially appreciate Dr. Joy DeGruy. She's been on the program repeatedly. Dr. Joy DeGruy Leary, author of Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, where she says, you know, name some ways that white people can mistreat groups of black people. And people are falling over themselves to name, prison industrial complex and environmental racism. And then she says, well, name some ways that black people mistreat groups of white people. Insert cricket sounds. So those are just some examples. If you hear someone say that, if it's a white person, but that needs to be challenged. There's no such thing. Black people do not practice racism. Roz Heyru, I think he, when I asked this question before, key part, black people are not members of a race. There's only one race, the white race. You have to be a member of a race to practice racism, and no non-white person qualifies as a member of a race. Make sure I reiterate that major point. Got to make sure you get it. If you've heard 20 episodes of The Cow, you should be able to knock that one out easily. Anyone acts like they want to say that non-white people are racist. That said, yeah, as we're waiting, see if we Brother Polite dials us. Again, if you have questions or comments, dial in. I'm not really interested in talking. I'd prefer to sit back and remember the sunshine. M1, person that dialed in, M1, if you have a comment or question, your line is open.
Oh, good evening to all.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, guys. Justice, as well as anyone else on. I just wanted to say a thank you for the show earlier. And you, when you talked about how when people discuss things on how instead of saying they shouldn't say they should be surprised that it should be called an act of racism or white supremacy. I've been having several discussions with people on this regarding what happened in Norway, the the white terrorist who we're told is responsible for the deaths of 91 people. Now, I've made the usual points that the media, as well as law enforcement, is being complicit in the system of white supremacy because he is not being demonized, not being called terrorist. And I also tell people specifically refer to this as either an act of white terrorism or white supremacy. Do not do what other people did. Other people immediately said, oh, this is Muslim terrorists, or this happened because some Iraqi cleric threatened this. I said, no. By you allowing people to say this man was a Christian, anti-racist, I don't know how that came in, anti-homosexual, whatever, just totally throws you off the point that this is a white man, he's committing white terrorism, and you only need to look at it for that. And I hope everybody, and I know the listeners to this show does, but I hope when their friends or family try to buy into a religious argument, if it's not the religion, white supremacy, as Neely Fuller says, it's white terrorism, what that man in Norway did. And it should only be called that, a white supremacy.
Excellent point. The religion of white supremacy. People should practice saying that. I think that would be very constructive if more non-white people said that and had that understanding. Racism, white supremacy, strongest religion on the planet. Highly constructive to point that out.
Yes?
Yes, ma'am.
My article is ready now.
All right, on. Feel free.
Okay. This article is from racismdaily.com. It was posted on July 23rd of this year. And actually, that was, I believe, today. Subject is study. This article is understudy. The title is Brazilians Feel Race and Skin Color Plays Key Role in Labor and Justice System. Most Brazilians feel the race and skin color have great influence in labor relations and in the way they are treated by police and the judiciary, according to a report from the Brazilian Geography Statistics Institute, IBGE. According to the paper, 63.7% of Brazilians interviewed said that skin color and race directly influences the lives of people in the country. Another 71% said race was influential at the workplace in getting a job. Race is also influential when it comes to the police and magistrates, according to 68.3% of interviews. The IBGE paper on ethnic racial characteristics was based on several public opinion polls taken in six of the country's most dynamic states. The paper also showed that Afro-Brazilians are paid on average 40% less than ethnic whites. In multiracial Brazil, over half the population is brown and black. Read the full report here. Here is blue underline. I just click on it, and it will. Well, actually, yes. I'm gonna click on it and see what it takes me to. Yeah, so yeah, the full report is here. Just click the button and Yeah, it will take you to the full report.
This is, regrettably, too familiar.
The picture is interesting, though.
What's the picture of?
It shows a black boy, well, I believe it's a boy, and it shows, it shows him holding a black baby, and, he has earrings on, has a hat, holding the baby, and yeah.
Global system, ladies and gentlemen. Global system. Ethnic whites. That's another slick one. Ethnic whites, whatever that means.
And ethnic racial characteristics.
I'm sorry?
Multiracial. Also ethnic racial characteristics and multiracial Brazil.
Multiracial. As though there are many races of people.
Sure.
White people are slick, man. White people are very slick. Slick and racist. Worldwide. See, do you have any other thoughts on that report or anything else you wanted to share?
I'm back to be, well, I'm happy to be back on the program, and it's, yeah, I'm just glad to be back on the couch.
I know. Glad to have Justice back on the counter racist grind, for sure. And we could have both been doing, you know, fun activities, frolicking in the sun, but we are here to fight racism, white supremacy, giving up our rare 80-plus degree day here in Washington State. The people who called in with hands, I'm just going to open your lines up so you all can feel free. The gentleman who called in, your line is still open, sir. Asar, you had a hand up, and the caller in Massachusetts, your lines are open. If you all had questions or comments, feel free. Just try to keep the background noise down.
Hey, Gus. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hi, how you doing, brother? Bless you, man. Love your show, man. Love your work. And you're my brother, man. I ain't never seen your face, but I don't even have to see your face tell you, you know, my brother. But, about the caller that called earlier, and he was talking about the guy, the white terrorist in Northwave, right? I'm like, just today, right, I was thinking about how white terrorism across the globe is a normal thing. For example, right, anywhere on the planet, you can find white people working on biological weapons, so-called, they call it studying a virus, they take a little virus and turn it into a thing that can kill and wipe out millions of people. Right, and it's not called terrorism. They are studying a virus. They are studying this. They are studying that. And where they take that? They take that to Africa and then places. That's where you see them Africans falling all over the place like flies. Then they put it in the media to us so that we can see it. They tell us that it's a famine, that people are dying because of drought. Man, you see them people over there, right? They be trying to put the food in their mouth. They so sick. You see them with the rice all over their cheeks and their nose. They can't even eat, man. Those are viruses. I'm thinking white people probably using radiation on them, spraying them, putting it in the water. I don't know what. You know what I mean? And another thing is two important words, man, planning and collaboration, right? Since all of us have been colonized by Europeans, and we no longer know how to interact with each other, We do not know how to open businesses, keep them up and going. We do not know how to do commerce with each other. You need money in this material world to survive. We do not know how to bring money in our communities and how to keep it either. That's what the word collaboration I'm talking about. That's what I was trying to say. The other thing is planning. European white supremacists, they just don't get up one day and do this or do that. These people plan years and years ahead. These people plan for 50 years ahead of time. They start the work, and their children or those other white supremacists that come behind them, they will make sure that the work keeps going. These people just don't do things from one day to another. These people plan things for a long time. We do not plan. We do not plan. And, you know, we do not collaborate with each other. I just wanted to say that.
White people make 500-year plans. I have seen that evidence repeatedly. The person who died, you all's lines are still open. I just wanted to check the person, Asar. Did you have a question or a comment, sir?
Yeah, I actually live in Sweden. We're right next door to Norway. And just wanted to give everybody a little update. We'll understand what's going on here. It's pretty much the news is being broadcasted from Norway. The languages are pretty similar, and I know Swedish a little bit. I'm not too fluent in it. But they're pretty upset about it. And the guy, what's really surprising, I would say, to most of the people here is that one of their own did it and that they know what the mentality is here, which is anti-black, anti-African, but the Africans and the people of color that do enter the country are very, most of the time, I put myself in that exception, they're depending, they're happy to be here. They're either, they may be educated political refugees, so on and so forth, or non-educated refugees, but they're put into a position which they're in a subordinate position, and since there's not many of them, you know, it makes it tougher. But back to this Anders Breivik, he's surprised the whole Scandinavia because he took white trust and abused it. And I think we need to really focus and make sure we keep an eye on this because we can see as if make sure that they don't turn this into a mental issue instead of a racist man who didn't appreciate that other white people were not toeing the line. Because where most of the people died were on Atulia, the island. And those people were so-called anti-racist. So he more than likely was very upset that they weren't toeing the line. So he wanted to send a message. But as I said, I live in Scandinavia. I just wanted to give everyone, you know, because I know your broadcast is heard worldwide, of course, that even though the Scandinavians are very refined in their racism, they're not blatant, they don't yell, pretty much, but when it comes to what really counts, employment, access to money, that's where they put the stops on, and you have to be very crafty to actually attain those things. So I keep an eye out on what just happened. I think the body count now is 91. So it's interesting. I keep an eye on it. And I heard he was a Freemason. I've been reading he's a Freemason. He not really any religious. Well, I guess being a Freemason is religious, but he was on racist websites. They're trying to cover it by saying He was anti-Muslim, but he was actually, he was anti-Muslim, but he was on racist white sites, but he was talking about Somalians, and Somalians are black. And most of the people that are coming are either entering Scandinavia, that's either, that I know of, in Sweden or Norway. They come from Somalia, Ethiopia, the recent refugees. So I just wanted to give that heads up to everybody.
Wow. That is fascinating. I got a little bit of an echo.
Okay,
it's good now. Yes.
Okay, yeah. I was concerned about the kid too.
I was concerned about that too. Like, whoa. That is fascinating. That is so fascinating. I want to check. I just want to make sure I'm not missing out on our guest. The person who dialed in from New York, is this Brother Polite by chance?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Groovy. Got our guest. Yes, sir. We can hear you.
You are muted.
Brother Polite.
Oops. You are unmuted.
Hello?
Can you hear me, sir?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Brother Polite? Yes, sir. I can hear you.
Yes.
Wow. Good to hear from you. Good to hear from you. I was...
Definitely.
Wow. Again, our guest for the evening...
You're breaking up a little bit.
Myself.
Okay, I will.
Gus is breaking up.
Okay.
Right.
Am I still?
I could try calling it in again.
I think it's me, not you, Brother Polite, because I can hear you fine. Am I still breaking up?
You're fine now. You're good.
Okay. Okay. Outstanding. The website, again, 2012stores.com. I was telling folks, if you visit the website on the first page, you will be immediately reminded that this is war, because they have first aid kits for sale. And I was saying that I had great respect for folks who function as though we are at war right now, because we are. Always a pleasure to have you on the program, and anytime we can share information, what you're up to, always appreciate it. Thank you for sharing some of your Saturday evening with us, sir.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's see. If it's anything you want to share before we get started, I know the topic you wanted to discuss, foreclosures and white supremacy, we can hop to it, but if it's anything you want to share with listeners before we begin, feel free.
Okay, definitely. Let me just start off by highlighting two events in particular, one being this coming Wednesday, which would be in the New York area on Flatbush Avenue Extension at Fulton Street. It's at Nicholas Brooklyn Bookstore. They have a Harlem, New York branch, or Manhattan branch. This one will be at the Brooklyn branch. It's Nicholas Brooklyn Bookstore, the proud sellers of my books as well as all my other products. And I'll be releasing one of my books a little bit earlier this coming Wednesday on the 27th, entitled Finance a Fiancé, Let's Make a Living Paying Other People's Taxes. That's going to be a book that I'm going to be releasing this coming Wednesday. Class is going to start between hours 6 and 9:30. It's in the downtown Brooklyn area. And the good brothers from Know the Ledge, they'll be streaming the event. I know you can go to knowtheledge.com, and you'll be able to find out more details as far as how the stream is going to go. I'm allowing them to stream the event as a courtesy and thank you upon the fact that I've also been on their radio show, and they have a high rapport with the members of the constituency as well. The main event will be on August 14th. On August 14th, I am doing a dissertation entitled Spiritual Business. I'll be releasing a series of books, book number 50, 51, and 52. Book number 50 was written by myself, or I should say book number 50 is written by my wives, my children, and I. All right, it's called Rich Mom, Poor Mom, Spiritual Business. And it's going to entail how the family construct, of course, subscribing to our African nature, how the family construct in an African sense would subscribe to economical functions. And as far as going to the max in their potential to generate the type of income to safeguard not only themselves in the present, but in the future, as far as their prosperity is concerned. Then we have book number 51, which is finance a fiancé, let's make a living paying other people's taxes. And we also have the tax lien and tax deed workbook, which is book number 52 that I'm also going to be releasing. There's a number of other books that I'm going to be releasing that day, but I haven't decided which ones. I have some that's ready. It's a matter of which ones we're going to print, because we print, bind, and design all the books ourselves. So I got to make the decision based on how I feel. But those three books in particular, book 50, 51, and 52, definitely going to be released on August 14th. They'll be available online. One of them are already available online, Rich Mom, Poor Mom, Spiritual Business. That book will help the brothers in as far as the criteria, establishing the criteria to which in a brother will pick a female instead of complaining all the time, oh, these females, they're crazy. Oh, you know, she won't let me see my child, you know, get away from that kind of chaos, and establish a better criteria so this can happen less instead of as frequent as it's constantly happening. It's the criteria. It's the pretense in which we get together and establish a relationship that's killing us the most. And we need to have some kind of economical premise when it comes to us engaging in some kind of relationship. So that's what that's going to help do for the brothers. And on the female end, what it's going to do is allow her to go into a state of introspection, deep introspection, and see herself for what she is. Is she a rich mom mentality or poor mom mentality? And of course, the number one question is always going to be, who makes y'all the lord or the masters over what mentality, what's rich and what's poor? And my answer for that, because of course we have a very pessimistic community, we tend to think on the most negative thing to say than the positive. But nonetheless, a question is a question, and it should be honored if it comes amongst us from a fire force. So what I always say is, we're coming from a level of success that is not too conventional when we probe into the black household. And that being the case, if anyone in our community should succeed in any one of their endeavors, then I say that it's incumbent that they share their success story with the rest of their family, who may not be as successful as they may have been. For the main point is to make sure that we come out of this oppression. And it's hard to see or tell or know that we are in a state of oppression simply because we don't have shackles on. So it's hard to get that point across to people. And because it is, perhaps when people succeed in their endeavors and whatever that endeavor may be, when they come back home or come back to the community and convey the message, hopefully it serves as an eye-opener for the rest of the community. So we want the sisters to be able to look at themselves as potential mothers, if not mothers already. Okay, do they have the rich mom or poor mom mentality? And verily, even if you're a real good sister, you're going to find some idiosyncrasy somewhere along the line. And this is something, like I said, mostly for introspection, to help, okay, along the path, so we could kind of diffuse some of the errors that have perpetuated themselves from one generation to the next. We have to now break the chain of mistakes, break the chain of errors. We are never going to be completely perfect, but we should strive for some type of perfection and as far as our inconsistencies are concerned. So these are the reasons why we wrote the books, and the reason why we have the right to write these books, because people all over the world feel they have the right to miseducate us. So we definitely have the right to correctly educate us. And again, it would come from a realm of success, and that's why we're going to be having this class, this dissertation. It's also going to serve as a seminar. I want to use that word seminar as opposed to lecture this particular time around, and it's always a conscious event. And on August 14th at the National Black Theater, 2033 National Black Theater on 5th Avenue and 125th Street. This is in the Harlem, New York area, New York, New York, Harlem, New York. The event commences at 2 o'clock p.m. and will end at 9 o'clock p.m. We implore if you ever spend any money on anything, you definitely should invest in this seminar. And the reason why I call it an investment, because you should expect a return as an end result of absorbing the information during the course of this dissertation. Oftentimes when people achieve some level of success, very rarely do they share it with their own. I own over 100 acres of land. I own over 8 houses. I own over 3 timeshares. I'm fluent in 7 languages. I'm the author of 50-plus books. I teach intentional calculus, calculus, algebra, geometry, sequential mathematics 1 to 6. Unfortunately, I did drop out of school in 10th grade, though I'm not an advocate of dropping out of school. I'm an advocate of people, if they should go to school, to go to school for something that they can be qualified or certified in, a thing that their community can use them for. That's what I encourage. My daughter's going to school, okay, to be an astrophysicist. She's going to be done with her homeschooling next year. She'll be 15 next year, and she'll be done with school next year, all right, because we have a homeschooling group which I spearhead and provide the curriculum for in New York, and it's very, very effective. Needless to say, we're going to get our children out of that health system, that school system, as soon as possible, by any means necessary, so they can move on and actually, you know, obtain the knowledge that is necessary for us to get to where we got to go. So that's August 14th. It's going to be streamed. It's going to be online. Hold on, Rebecca.
Sunday, August 14th, 2033rd, 5th Avenue, National Black Theater, Harlem, New York. Check it out. The brand new books will be for sale.
Now, sir. Yeah, hello?
Oh, I just heard. Hello? Yes, sir, I can hear you. Yes, sir.
Yes. So, needless to say, we're going to go real hard on that particular day to teach as much as we possibly can teach, a lot of effective methodologies that we have employed to generate a more than substantial income during the course of just the last year. And that being the case, we suggest that everyone comes in, because everyone can use extra money, whether we want to call it supplementary income, passive income, whatever the case may be. Everyone could use it, so why not? And most people complain they ain't got enough money anyway, or that the herbs or holistic science cost too much anyway. So this is where we come in. We're going to come in with this information and work to the best of our ability to make this information as coherent as possible. Amongst the many things that we will be teaching about that day will be, namely, how to make money off of timeshares, why copyright and trademark your name, why become a secure party, okay? Learn how to make money off of the money you spent last year. Learn how to purchase a house for hundreds or a couple of thousands devoid of mortgage. Use the zodiacal signs to propel you in your business endeavors, okay? How to make thousands to millions of dollars off a tax lien certificate. Save your house from foreclosure in the event that it is going into foreclosure. These are the many things that we will be speaking on that day, and a few more subject matter. That's going to be August 14th. August 14th, the event commences at 2 o'clock p.m., and if you're not going to be able to be there present, you definitely can view it online. It will be streamed. You could go to 2012 Robert Edgar Sam, 2012 R-E-S. You go to 2012res.com. You can learn more about the upcoming events, particularly this one for August 14th, 2011, on a Sunday, as well as find out how to view it, even if you're not going to be in New York area. And needless to say, it's a very important event, because there is no revolution without funding. There's no revolution without funding. We can talk about taking back what's ours. We can talk about what's our land. We could talk about, we need schools. That's what we need. We could talk about, we need shelters. We can't have our women in shelters. We could say, we need hospitals. We could say all that we want. But the prerequisite device that's going to enable us to erect those type of institutions and infrastructure will be money. We could be as spiritual as we want to be until we make making money a part of our spiritual application, like everyone else has, to make them so very successful amongst us.
Context of white supremacy. During this seminar on August 14th, you are also going to be talking about foreclosures. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. I guess if you could share, give us kind of a preview of what you'll be sharing and how what's going on with foreclosures, how that relates to white supremacy.
Okay, great. Well, I would like to say, first and foremost, on the subject matter of white supremacy, definitely exists. Unfortunately, it doesn't exist in the capacity that many of us, I wouldn't say would like to believe, many of us have become complacent in believing it, because blaming other people at times can be a coping mechanism if we're not careful. I would say that some people should not be offered or allowed to entertain the themes of fanatical people who convey the message of what white supremacy means to represent. If it's not taught to our families in a mature and intellectual manner, what's going to happen is, to the convenience of the poverty-stricken in our community, they will turn white people into the new boogeyman, and they will be the reason why they can't get nothing accomplished. Whether that's a construct devised by white people themselves or not, the point is we have to maturely educate our people so that they don't purposely fail. We don't want our people to purposely fail, and as far as believing that they can't even win, because whenever something goes wrong, just blame somebody else. That's, of course, not the intent of nobody on the show. But I do know a lot of people misconstrue this. And the reason why I'm saying that is because the number one reason why a house is going to foreclosure is because the property taxes are not paid. Over 95% of the houses that go into foreclosure is on account to the fact that the property tax was not paid and someone purchased the lien. Okay, the lien represents the delinquent tax on the property. That's what the lien represents. And the county government, right, will give you what's called a TLC in most states. They have other euphemisms. But the most popular one that they generated is TLC, or tax lien certificate. When a property goes delinquent, okay, when an owner goes delinquent and paying their property tax for more than a year, a redemption period, a probation period, is incurred, which is the amount of time, the span of time, the duration of time in which a person has, the property owner, namely, has to pay back those delinquent taxes from a year extended before the lien holder has the right to foreclose, or the county or the IRS, whoever is the lien holder particularly or in the best position, okay, to do so. And that normally would be an additional 60 days. Some properties have a one-year redemption period. Some have a two-year, some have a three-year, some have a four-year, and even some even have a five-year redemption period, which, again, the redemption period or probation period is a period and time in which the property owner has to pay their delinquent property taxes in full in addition to penalties, as well as the preceding ones or succeeding taxes, depending on what time this conversation comes in. Like I said, the number one reason why properties get foreclosed on is on account to delinquent property tax. So now a person may say, well, polite, if you're saying that the number one reason for foreclosure is simply rooted in the mere fact that people aren't paying their property taxes in time, then what does that have to do with white supremacy? Well, the problem is we get a lot of our education from Caucasians, and therein it lies the truth. That's the trap. The trap is the fact that we're educated by the people who entrap us. And I'm not one to like pointing fingers and blaming people, but you got to call a spade a spade. This is where the other race fits in, and this is where we as a black people, a Nubian people, a Moorish people, however we want to call ourselves, those who have the information have to step in and clean up this mess that was purposely created so we could be working against ourselves. Because you'll have somebody who didn't pay their property tax and turn around and say, yeah, they just come. Like, for instance, you'll see a neighborhood, one minute it's all black, and the next minute it's all white. And we'll say, yep, they're moving the black people out. Yeah, they're taking black people's houses. Hold on, there was a contract made. There was a contract made. And you were supposed to oblige to the themes or provisions in that contract. The second you go AWOL or you go astray, quite naturally, according to the provisions in the contract, if you should fail, like, for instance, to pay your property tax, you should have known before you bought the house or the property what is the redemption period on that house, how much times property tax is paid, and then what amount. A lot of times we'll buy the house totally oblivious to this information, totally oblivious. And we'll also be under the belief that, you know what, I have to pay my water bill first. No, I have to pay my light bill first. I have to pay portions of this mortgage. They allow me to pay portions of this mortgage. This is where the white supremacy comes in. Because, first of all, let's go back to school, home economics. They'll tell you bring flour. They'll tell you bring tomatoes. They'll even tell you bring sugar. Where does the economic part come in home ec? In fact, they don't even call it economics anymore. They just call it home ec. At what point did they teach us anything about that word fiscal or budgetizing? At what point did they teach us how to budgetize when we went to school? At what point? Even when we learn or we take up an economic course in school, it has nothing to do with being a homeowner, which is the American dream. So how is it they didn't have the time to incorporate the American dream within the confines of the curriculum? So what happens is a lot of us are out here blindsided. You might come up with some money from a will. You might have saved up your money real hard. You might have falsely claimed some children on your taxes. Whatever it was that you did, you saved up your money and you got you a house and you were uneducated when you got it. And that is not by no mere chance. You were uneducated on purpose. In fact, you were educated to be uneducated. You were educated to believe that you can walk into things thinking you have enough knowledge until you find out that you don't. This is an issue that is pending in our community for quite some time. It's pending. The big part of white supremacy is misinformation that I would say, yes, they're definitely responsible for. And in fact, this misinformation isn't so much that someone's teaching you the wrong thing. It's so much the fact that the people you subject yourself to educate you just tend to miss out on certain points, hence the term misinformation. They just tend to miss information during the course of teaching you. So you get these scattered or these sporadic pieces of information, and it's never whole, but you walk away feeling whole. Because especially if you got a degree, you walk away feeling whole. You walk away feeling like you know it all, you know enough. And then you get into these jams. And the reason why I brought this up is because the tax lien, okay, when you become a first position lien holder, that lien that you have, okay, supersedes any other encumbrance on the property that that property owner has. Meaning if there should be any other liens on the property, if there should be any other encumbrances on the property, meaning any other thing to stagnate, okay, the reality that exists amongst you and that house for that period of time, the tax lien supersedes all other liens, whether they come before, during, or after it. Because one thing they don't teach us is when you buy a property, the properties already have a lien on it. A lot of people say, I just put a lien on a property. A lot of more say that too in the community. I don't know what the heck you're talking about. You don't put a lien on a property. All properties come with a lien. And what happens is it's likened to whole numbers and integers in mathematics. In mathematics, you learn about the number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. During the course of your school career, you start learning about decimals. Later on in the school career, about 5th, 6th grade, you know what they start saying to you? Something slick. They start saying, you know what? Every whole number has a decimal at the end of it, but you just don't see it. You can put 6.0, but the zero is irrelevant, so you don't even have to put the zero there or the dot. You can just write 6. But in the case that the number should be fractionalized, then the decimal becomes important. It's pertinent, okay, for it represents the fractionalization of that integer. or that number. Why is that important? I'm just giving you an analogy because that's how the homes are. The lien doesn't go on the radar. So it's always there. It's like the 6.0, 5.0. The lien is always there. So they don't tell you when you buy the property that there's a lien already there. Okay? This is like the same thing that happened to us in fifth, sixth grade when we found out, look, all numbers have a decimal there. It's just not relevant to put it there until the number is fractionalized. Then the decimal comes on the radar. Whoops. So guess what? When you purchase your house, the first thing they should have told you is that your house or whatever property you got comes with a lien on it. But it's not relevant, nor is it ever going to be on the radar until you go delinquent in paying your property taxes for at least a year. All right? And guess what system they set up for us? All right, maybe they'll throw us in. We'll say mortgage. Let's say the word mortgage. Mortgage means debt. Why? Because you're going to be paying this probably till you die. If a person knows that you're only making $20,000, $30,000 a year, $30,000, $40,000 a year, okay, and they sell you a house for, let's see, sell you a house for $150,000, let's just say that, and extend to you a mortgage of, let's say, $1,200 a month, which is paying rent for a house. That's what mortgage is, $1,200 a month. Okay, so you got a $150,000 house. You're paying $1,200 a month, okay? Mind you, you know, property tax inclusive, you got to pay that. You got light bill every 3 months, more or less. You probably got a water bill. You got a whole bunch of stuff going on. You got probably children, or you might wind up with some, or one. You have a house probably as part of the dream. You work a job, okay? You have to commute. It costs you to go back and forth, or if you're taking public transportation, whatever the case is. They already factored in the probability of you being inconsistent in your payments. They already factored in when's the right time or when it will suffice to grab that property from off of you when you become delinquent after a year. Oh, this is another thing. Not only do they put you in a compromising position when they sell you a house, okay, regardless of the amount of money that they know you make, and knowing just in miscellaneous things, miscellaneous activity, all you need is just one emergency to throw off your payments. They understand this, and in turn, that leads to a domino effect. And you can't pay off for your house. Hold on, there's another thing we got to talk about. The system is designed in such a way it can work to your advantage if you have knowledge and work to a complete disadvantage if you don't have knowledge. Property tax is very important because the county government uses property tax to build the infrastructure of the community, both on a physical pretense and a social pretense. Property taxes, more especially from the likes of houses, homeowners, right? Your property tax goes into paying the policemen, making sure the lights stay on in the hospital, paying for firemen, making sure the children can eat school lunch, making sure the children have teachers, making sure the children have seats and chairs, making sure the highways are still smooth enough for the cars to ride by, okay? Anytime you see vacant houses, especially in big cities, anywhere you see vacant houses and crack buildings, you can tell that the schools are going to be bad and there's going to be potholes in the community because they're all one and the same. The property tax feeds all those different venues. The property tax feeds all those different channels. Failure for a community, which means communion, for a group of people to be in a state of communion, failure for a community to not be able to pay their property taxes as a whole or in a lump sum will represent a poor school criteria in terms of the curriculum, poor criteria as far as there's too many children in a classroom, there's too few teachers around, the roads on the way to school is horrible. Property tax is what sustains the reality of people on a social level, okay? So what happens is these property taxes is very, very valuable. What does this have to do with anything or the entrapment? Well, first of all, they gave you a house that they knew, okay, in respect to how much you make a year. They shouldn't even have did that to you. In fact, they should not even raise the price value. The fair market value of the house, first of all, is reckless. The price they sell the houses for, they call the fair market value, FMV. It's ridiculous, first of all, and it's purposely ridiculous. So they can give you something to your debt, a mortgage or mortgage. Okay? It's purposely designed that way. And they know the ratio in respect to how much you earn a year to what you have to pay them during the course of 10, 15, 20 years down the line, chances are you will come up short. And then you don't even know what you should pay first. And it's hard to find out how to pay your property taxes and sit through that amidst of everything else, even though that comes and that supersedes all other encumbrances and liens. Now we do understand, look, if the property taxes are not paid, society is on the brink of destruction, failure. So guess what they set up now? Okay, they give you a house, and you bought it for way too much money. You couldn't afford it. Of course, you couldn't afford it. So they extended to you a mortgage. They became your mortgage holder. That's true. They know you're not really going to be able to pay it. So they set up a system that when you're not able to pay it, the county still needs the money because the county uses that to pay the people who don't get paid the same way that you get paid when you go to work. Okay, they get paid through property taxes. They get paid through taxes in general. So what they've done in the county is said, listen, when the owner goes delinquent in their property taxes for a year, we're going to make it incredibly hard for them to pay back those property taxes. What we're going to do, we're going to see to it that the person, if somebody should come, okay, if somebody should come and save the day and pay your delinquent taxes, come and pay your delinquent taxes. If somebody should come, save the day, and pay for your delinquent taxes, we will give them a tax lien certificate representing the fact that they are now a first position lien holder on your property. In fact, these first position lien holders, in a long story short, I'm going to go to it and reverse right back. These first position lien holders could pretty much own your property just for establishing, not putting a lien on, but establishing that lien on your property by paying your past due or delinquent taxes. Let's say your taxes a year is $800 a year, and you didn't pay it throughout the course of the whole year. Then someone else comes along. His name is Bob. He says, look, I'll pay that $800 property tax for you. Okay, the county says, yes, we need that $800 because we have to build society. Okay, everyone understands why the county has to do what they have to do because they're trying to build society. This is how they look like they're not immoral when they're doing this. Okay, so they say, okay, give me the $800, Bob, even though this is not your house. Thank you for paying this other guy's property tax. So you know what we're going to do for you, Bob? We're going to make sure that we give you 16 to 25% back in your principal. But not only are we going to give you that, what we're going to do is throw on a bunch of surcharges and penalties and fines, which are all the same thing, but they're going to play those games. We're going to throw on surcharges, penalties, and fines. That's going to be overwhelming for a person who, first of all, didn't pay their property tax, went delinquent in the first year. We're going to throw on penalties, surcharges, and fines, all the same thing, and add that on. And then say, add that to the principal, and then we're going to give you 16 to 25% of that. Why would the county do that? And hold on, not even why would the county do it. We know why the county got to do it, because the county wants the property tax. Why? Hold on. The next question is, who does that money go to? I just made it clear. The person who pays the delinquent property tax, out of the sky, it could be anybody on the planet. The person who pays it, they're not only going to get 16 to 25%, okay, interest. It's going to be compounded interest because they're also going to generate what? More money from what? The penalties, the late penalties, the surcharges, the fines, and all this other stuff they want to call. They're going to add that to it, and the county's going to give it to you. Why is the county going to give this to you? Because the county wants to encourage you to do this again. The next question is, hold on. If a property owner can't pay the delinquent property taxes, then what if the county adds on all these extra charges, and these charges are $500 late penalties and $400 this and $30 that and $50 this? How on earth is a person who's already 1 year or 2 years delinquent in their property tax? And, oh, yeah, the county doesn't take installments. They want everything straight. If they give you a penalty, they want what you owe them plus the penalty straight, okay? They give you three penalties on top of it. And what you owe them for a year or two, they want all of it straight. No installments. They ain't working out no deal. So anyway, all they want to make sure is whoever pays that property tax, we're going to compensate them and we're going to compound that interest. So now the question is, okay, if a person can't pay their property tax for a year, they can't pay it for a year, all right, what makes you think they'll be able to pay that plus all these other interests and these fines and these penalties or these surcharges, however you want to call it? Of course they won't be able to pay it. And why is the county charging so much for their late fees? Well, I tell you why. When a person is a first position lien holder, a person that's a first position lien holder, what happens is after the redemption period is over, which is the period of time at which a person that owns a property has to pay back their delinquent taxes, their back due taxes, once that expires, the present lien holder, particularly the first position lien holder, has the right of rescission, which is the right to refuse foreclosing and give it off to the second position lien holder or just the county to simply foreclose. But in most cases, the first position lien holder is going to say, well, yeah, I want to foreclose. So they have to send a certified mail to all people or parties that have an invested interest in the property, which is namely the property owner and whoever else is on the deed, in addition to who? The bank that sold the property over to them. Now we do know technically that property owner is not really the property owner. They just gave them that title to make them feel comfortable and secure so he could go to sleep and have a background guard over his head. Because the truth of the matter is, if that person was paying mortgage, they really didn't own the house, even though they're called the property owner and their name is on the deed. So guess what's going to happen? The county knows that the property owner more likely won't be able to pay these additional fines and penalties. But guess who will pay it? The bank will pay it. You know why? Because if the property owner doesn't pay these delinquent taxes and the lien holder comes in and pays the delinquent taxes, guess what's got to happen? If no one claims and if no one pays the lien holder, the first position lien holder, back the money, the lien holder will get the property for the amount of money that he paid in taxes, in addition to just having a new deed generated, which is going to be anywhere between $400 and $850, and probably pay a real estate attorney to help them close, if not the county, which is another $1,500. And here we go. Somebody can get your $150,000 house for less than $3,500 at the end of all of this. And mind you, when they get the house, the house comes with no mortgage. The house comes with no mortgage. So guess what? Most people that know anything know don't buy a house with a mortgage on it. Because you know what you can do? You can just put a – you could establish a lien on someone else's property and get a house devoid of mortgage. Just by catching all the houses, there's over 33 million houses out there. Out here in America, there's over 33 million houses. 33 million houses that are just up for grabs in respect to the fact that they are delinquent in property taxes. So why on earth would anyone who knows this information go out there and get them a house and sign a death trap, a lifetime contract, a death contract with the bankers? Hold on, let me go back to the bankers. The bankers are going to pay this off.
Can I throw in one quick question?
Go ahead.
Can I throw in one quick question? I'm sorry, I don't want to throw you off track. I'm going to write down so
you don't.
Bankers. I just wanted a little application for listeners thinking about what you just said about, you know, when this Bob, when he picks up this lien, pays the delinquent property tax,
yes.
And he, if you are not able to pay all this back, Bob can get your house void of mortgage.
Yes.
We were saying $150,000 home. He can get it for less than $3,500, right? I was thinking that I want listeners to think racial dislocation. This should be real ugly racism, white supremacy. So when you have these black neighborhoods and people are not able, white people know they already set it up so that you're not going to be able to pay this and not be able to pay that. White people can come in and take your property for nothing and then put up condos and then make the property value skyrocket. Like, that's how ugly
this is where it's at. This is where it's at. That's exactly where I'm going, because when I was young, you know what used to bother me? When my father would say, yeah, this used to be a black neighborhood. And I'm saying, hold on now. How the heck does it go from black to white like that? How does that work? I never understood that. And we all talk about it. Like, you know, this community is just, you know, full of Italians now, full of Jews. How on earth does a community just switch race like that inside of 5 years? How does that happen? Well, you see, the redemption period doesn't go beyond 5 years. I never knew what was going on. So the only thing we could do is speculate and say some kind of conspiracy is going on here. But we didn't know what was going on, but we knew enough to know this was a setup. But the only thing we could surmise is they did something illegal and they pushed us out the property even though we were still paying. That's the impression I got, and that's the impression most black people had, is that, you know what, someone's doing something illegal here and kicking us out of our homes. But believe me, if people were just being kicked out of their homes, that would have offset a different type of revolution. But still, this is underhanded, okay? Because of this displacement of the races. This is underhanded because they are selling properties with a fair market value of $150,000 and more to lower income blacks. And first of all, the fair market value of a house in a lower income community should never go beyond $80,000. It should never go beyond $80,000. And actually, it should never go beyond $50,000. But let's go far. And then property taxes still can be paid the same way. But these houses should never go beyond $80,000. And the reason why I say that, because you can clearly see once you get into your fifth year, you're going to struggle because economical times get harder and harder. Okay? The burdens on homes generating revenue gets higher and higher, which means the price of living becomes more and more difficult. So you have a lower income situation, and the price of living is constantly going up, and you have a mortgage that you won't be able to pay until 20 years down the line. What do you think is going to happen? Somebody's going to walk in there and just pay property tax after you've choked yourself for the first 5 or 10 years or 8 years, 6 years, 2 years, or 3 years. After the first five, let me explain. A lot of times when you go get a house, they let you know about the non-qualifying, okay, the non-qualifying financing program, which is when the government will say they give you money, right? I don't like saying that because they're not giving you nothing. It doesn't even exist. They should show us the cash. But the government will give you money to help you get the house in the first place. So, honey, look, we needed $12,000 to get the house. Guess what? All we had to do was put up $3,000, $4,000. And our government just said, yo, just hit us back off later. So as long as you got the house, I mean, come on, we've been in trap for a long time. Living in the ghetto, living in the hood, living in the projects, if you get an opportunity to finally get a house, ain't much running through your mind with the exception of the fact freedom. Most of us, when we got our first apartment or we got to live in the basement of somebody's house, we were so proud of ourselves. Most of us, when we got our first car, forget the car, when we got our first cell phone, we were very proud of ourselves because it was a sign of independence and that we were on our come up. So you don't think they cater to that emotion? Say, look, we're going to give you a house. The feeling you have, I'm out of my family's house. I don't got to rely on that man or that woman. I got my own. Now I got my own house. Now I got my own car. Finance this, finance that. You want them in over your head because you got poor business and money management skills. This credit is a trap. I ain't mad at credit, but I swear to you, it is a trap. And it was a trap devised for the lower-income black community. It's a trap devised for the lower-middle-class black community. It is a trap because, first of all, the reason why I say it's a trap, because if we have to rely on the schooling that we were subject to in our communities, then all of this is a trap because we were never prepared for this in all the years we've been going to school. We are never prepared for this demonology. And the reason why I say it's demonology, because all you have to do is fall flat on your face. All you have to do is fall flat in your face, and it can drive you crazy or send you straight to drinking or smoking. You know, when a man and a woman are together for 5 years extended, according to common law, whoever is living the best is obliged to have to give them something, some form of restitution, some form of dowry. And as far as the fact that if you were accustomed to living a $100,000 lifestyle and now you have to be reduced to a $20,000 lifestyle, it could affect you psychologically. So they know in relationships, if you've been with somebody long enough, even if you didn't get them married, even if you ain't married with them or married to them, by common law, you are married. And because of that, you have to give them some form of restitution upon the breakup of your relationship. So what do you think happens to the psychology? Psychologically, what do you think happens to the mind of the person who felt they had a new house, felt they had a new car, and at least can use their phone and starts losing it all, one behind the other, as the creditors are leaving notes on your door, and you're stressed out? What do you think this sends us to? I guarantee if you walk up to the average crackhead, if they still can rationalize, if they're in their early stages of their syndrome, they will tell you they were former homeowners. They will tell you that they had a student loan and they was in school. They will tell you what happened when they was at the peak of their success or what they believed to be the peak of their success, which really was the peak or the inception of their destruction. This is what's going on. And you see, it was one thing when we didn't have nothing. We were still endowed with a great deal of creativity. It's another thing when you think you have it all, or that your life is finally going somewhere after struggling for so many years, only to find out you made a mistake that you can't walk away from and just get back on your feet in a few months or a year's time. And a year is too long to come off of a setback, such as losing a home and scrambling and dealing with the pressures to even have your family or your children or your significant other looking at you like, what are you going to do now? As you sit in that house, you know that the creditors are coming after you, but you still play pretend and go to work like everything's cool until the day comes where the sign is put on the house while you're still living in it, and it starts destroying you mentally. Most of us can't fathom this reality. Most of us are subjected to this reality at one point or the other, and most of us will never come out of it again. Because the worst thing you could do is take away from people who didn't really have at all. It's the worst thing you could ever do. And that's where the white supremacy comes in. That's where the dysfunctionalism comes in. This is where the hells and the burdens come from. See, it's so systematic that you have intelligent blacks that know enough to know, no, white people ain't do that to you. Black people wasn't paying their bills. See, they too intelligent for their own good. They've been educated real good by the white man, so they know his real estate laws and everything. They know enough. And I tell you, most real estate agents don't even see it from this perspective. They're not even too familiarized with the fact that people are cashing in on tax liens. They're not too familiarized with that. They're really not at all. All right? So we have our own that if you try to tell them, look, this is a setup, I'll walk with them halfway until I find out what's their perspective of the setup. But one thing is for sure, if you felt like white folks was up to something, they definitely was. They probably just wasn't able to articulate what exactly it was up to, but they're definitely up to something. And it's destroying our community inside out because every day our families are walking into this trap. And guess how easy it becomes for those who know? Just imagine a whole white community that knows. Do you think they're going around buying houses with mortgage on it when there's 33 million houses on the market and only 10,000 legitimate investors? There's over 100,000 plus. There's 100,000 to 200,000 plus houses waiting for you at your disposal. Instead, we go in the other direction. Sign me into that death trap. Sign me into that mortgage that I'll be paying for the rest of my life. You'll be working for a house. That is not the lifestyle that our ancestors precipitated for us. This is not the climate that we're supposed to be living in. We're not supposed to be working to keep our house and our car for most of our life. And by the time we pay for it and go into retirement with the little crappy pension that they give us, we're not supposed to be sitting here working for most of our life for material things. And then upon the finale, the season finale, we have 6 years before we die because of lifetime expectancy. We retire at 66. We finally pay off all these bills, almost own most of our stuff, and we're on the way out. Back hurts, ankle hurts, knee hurts, and this is the way we leave. Years of working for two or three pieces of material. Don't even have nothing left here for our children. And if we should die before our children can inherit our debts, because that's what they like doing now. Oh, yeah, no, you can keep your mother's house, but she owed this, that, and the other during the time of her transition because no one was taking care of the bills. Because we don't know enough to set up a financial POA or power of attorney. We don't know enough to set up a medical power of attorney. The whole family starts scrambling when things hit the fan. We don't know enough to establish a living trust. We don't know enough to establish a QRP. We don't know enough to establish life insurance policies to be affixed to our quality retirement plan, a tax deferrable interest compensation arrangement. We don't know nothing about none of that stuff. We have to go to special schools to learn that or get special certifications to learn that or be born to somebody who didn't know it that endowed us with the information. And the way we are as a community today, even if your predecessors or your mothers or your fathers or you are the mother or you are the father, have the information, the way we have become so controlled, stigmatized, and socially engineered, you find that the younger generation desecrates the legacy that their predecessors, their forefathers, and foremothers left on account to a lack of information and not paying attention when they were at the peak of their success. Most of our younger generation, if you're succeeding, they don't even pay attention to you. And then they inherit your goods and destroy it in less than half the time it took to erect it. So now we need to have a serious class again. We got to have a serious class again so we can protect ourselves. We can use the system to our advantage, but we have to protect ourselves and know that we're about to make a pact with the devil. You got to be for real with the situation here. We got to be for real and call a spade a spade. And I couldn't say it better as the brother talked about the displacement of the races, how someone could come in and just pay less than $4,000 for what you was on contract to pay $150,000 or more for. And by default, they'll get you a house with no mortgage, and they was given a tip and missed of it. I'm like, come on. And now can we say, well, is this exclusively for whites, or can blacks do it too? Yeah, blacks could do it too. But how many blacks you think really doing it, and how many whites you feel are aware of it? Put those two combinations together and we'd be very far apart. The blacks that don't know and the whites that do know. We'd be very, very far apart. Because, again, we're stigmatized by socioeconomical disposition, which means on account of us being so poor and impoverished and subject to dilapidated areas, the second you give us something or give us the opportunity to have, we're going to jump and try to grab it. See, if someone keeps pushing you away, it can work a certain level of reverse psychology on you, where if I keep pushing you away, you'll start trying to grab to hold me. And that's what slavery did to us. White man pushes away so much, we can't wait to get intimate and bond with him. It's reverse psychology. He starts making you think, you know what, you need to really be with him. He don't want you to see what's really gone. He come out that room sweating and smiling, oh, it's good up in there. You know what you start doing mentally? I want to get up in there. Oh, nah. He'll tell you, nah, you don't really want to be in there. Meanwhile, he don't really got nothing in there for you. But he comes out sweating, smiling, confetti on his head, give you the impression you want to be in there. Then one day he says, you know what, I'm going to let you in. I know we ain't never let you in. We're going to give you an opportunity to mingle amongst us. He throws you in that room, and 10 years later, you wish you never walked in there, and you don't even know what the heck you was thinking to get in there. This is a reality. And you can say, yo, we blame white people for this, that, and third, and everything. I believe we need to hold ourselves accountable for these type of things. But we shouldn't omit the fact that it was a well-thought-out plan. And it's not a one-month plan. This is a well-thought-out, one-to-five-year redemption period plan. Out of all words, to call it redemption, redeemed. And it's called redeemed when a person pays for the – when you a person pays – for their delinquent tax, it's called redeemed. But who's responsible for this redemption? See, or probation period. This is insane what's going on. So, yeah, the foreclosure paradigm, and it is a paradigm because it is going on rampantly. And the former, these trying economical times, everyone's losing their houses. But guess what? You know how much people are becoming millionaires as an end result of us black people? Let me show you the game. Some people probably not really catching it. Listen, the name of the game is, let's pretend the economy is shot so bad that everyone's losing their house, right? But we just have to make sure it appears everyone's losing their house, because really they shouldn't make no more houses. There's enough houses on the market to stop making houses. They're still making houses. All right, look at this situation here. What we're going to do is create, you know how they have a baby boom? We're going to create a millionaire boom. How are we going to create a millionaire boom? We're going to construct this ideology called the recession, right? We're going to revisit this thing, because this is where all the other millionaires came from and perpetuated themselves up until these solids started running out of money. Got to do it again. What we're going to do, we're going to create hard economical times. And these hard economical times, right, are going to end result in a bunch of people having to lose their houses, okay? And when all these people start losing their houses, we're going to have another group of people here educated enough to know these hard economical times is the exact time all of us can become millionaires. in these hard economical times, the group of us that knows and is aware of the game won't have to know too much information, won't have to do too much research, won't have to go to school at all. All we have to do is wait for these hard economical times to transpire, and what we'll do, we'll walk in like a thief in the night from these people's hard work to get into the position where these buildings were erected and contracts were made. That's what we needed to happen. They needed you to get into the door. They needed you to fix it up a little. They needed you to paint up a little. They needed you to pay the water bill and the tax bills and make sure everything is running. So when these people come in upon you losing it, they can decide amongst all the 33 million houses at their disposal which one is left in the best condition for them to walk in and grab for pennies on the dollar after you've done all the work. And we'll chalk it up to experience and call it economical hardships, poor economy, recession. And meanwhile, if we were in such a recession, how come millionaire after millionaire is rising? Now, you see, it would sound crazy. It would sound crazy if I told you, in 8 months, I acquired over $500,000 in the state. It would sound nuts. You know why? Because you say $500,000. Do you know that if you get a house that's $200,000, you could damn near get $200,000? It's called a HELOC or a home equity loan. Because a house is one of the highest forms or most appraised assets known to humanity, not your car, because you can give that away. If you traded in your shoes, you could just buy new shoes. But in terms of a house, a place where you live, something that you normally want one generation to the next to walk in and out of, we're not talking about black people out there, man. We're talking about black people in the right state of mind. Understand, you want your house to have some generations on it, some mileage on it. You want to pass it on to your children so your children can come. Be born into what? Inherited wealth, meaning that's one less burden they will have upon being born, which is trying to get a house. That's how this thing works for people that's really focused. This is how this thing works. Do we understand what's really taking place here? I hope everyone really is understanding what is taking place here and how we've been duped and how we're working very, very hard so some people could just walk in overnight and take what you thought to be yours and so little time and so less effort. But if I said in less than eight months, over $500,000 in the state, you will probably say that Negro is crazy, he's nuts, he believes that he has over $500,000 in the state. He believes he has I don't believe I have $500,000 in the state. I have more than $500,000 in the state. I said in 8 months, I've acquired over $500,000 in the state. And if I told you I didn't spend no more than $12,000 for over $1 million in the state, you would have to get the knowledge first to understand why that's true and how I could even did it for less, granted the circumstance. This is not lotto. This is reality. And this is what I'm going to be teaching that day because it's now our time to play the game. It's now our time. Look, someone in Texas just got a mansion for $16. Look it up if you don't believe me. Somebody in Texas, a brother, just got a mansion that some white folks worked very hard for to get. He just got a mansion for $16. And that $16 represented the application that he downloaded off the internet, filled out, and sent it to the county that was responsible or the jurisdiction, the county that corresponds with the jurisdiction where that mansion is at. And he got the mansion for $16. This thing was a $300,000+ abode. And he got it for $16. Okay? $16. You look that up. And he went through a little bit of research and everything to get that. Well, what I'm telling you, the amount of research he did, cut that in half, and cut that part in half, and cut that part in half, and you'll be where I'm at. It's not difficult. You can buy a house with no mortgage for $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, and the house be over $100,000. You have a house over $100,000, you can pull out what they call a home equity loan. I don't care if they say you got poor credit. You can have a 500 or 600 credit score, and I can show you how you can pull out $60,000, $80,000 from that house, rent it out, pay for that house and the interest back after 10 months,
keep that money, invest in the franchise. It pays you back for the house again in 3-4 months, depending on the franchise you get. You get a Subway, it's about $15,000. Come on, listen, there's a lot that we can do in a very short span of time. A lot of our leaders have came and pumped our lungs up, filled it up with rhetoric galore, filled it up with kill this one, kill that one, kill this person's baby, kill that one's baby, sell this bean pot. Look, we've been going nuts with all this information, all right? And it served a purpose during a specific point in time when we needed it most because we were starting to believe that we were inferior. That is not our issue today. We got almost everybody down to the crackhead walking up and down our block that was there during the 60s who was doing their thing, telling you that they're the original man. We do not have a self-esteem problem like that no more. We do have some insecurities, it's true, and some other idiosyncrasies, that's true. However, most of us, for the most part, are very proud of ourselves. We walking down up and down the block calling ourselves God, calling other people the devil. That is not our issue. The issue is having the right information to sustain us in this day and time. For the time that we allot to study is in studying rhetoric that we cannot use to fully compensate us for all that we have lost throughout the years. We cannot feed our children off the type of information that we are studying so diligently. So it's time for a change in information. I'm not telling anyone to drop out the Hebrew Israelites. I'm telling you, if you join the Hebrew Israelites, chances are you're not going to learn nothing from them about real estate. You're not going to learn how to make $1 million. You're not going to learn how to make $100,000. You're not even going to learn how to make $10,000. You're not even going to learn how to make $1,000. If you join the Black Panther Party, your lungs are going to be filled with kill Whitey, hate Whitey, the goddamn cracker. You're going to be filled with that. And I ain't knocking it. I ain't knocking it at all. What can you feed your children off of that? No. That's the problem that I got with this information. So it's not so much quit it overall. I'm saying appropriate the information, man. Appropriate or allocate certain amount of time to study for things that will be a benefit to you and your family or your future family. Okay? Cater to your disposition. It's where you cater to rhetoric and wind up broke and then feel like the black organizations owe you something for pumping rhetoric in your chest. Because that's part of the white supremacy. Because, you see, they'll make sure you're impoverished, and then they'll set up some of these black organizations to cater to your emotion. And so long as it can cater to your emotion, month after month after month, then guess what? So long as they can cater to your emotion month after month after month, they can keep you there stuck. Because if you're in one of these organizations, so long as you know who the person it is to blame, you'll never make anything of yourself. That's how a lot of these organizations are designed. They'll keep you there for 10, 15 years regurgitating the same things. So we have to be careful. We have to say, okay, look, we do need some of this information. We do need to be angry. We do need fight information. But somewhere in your curriculum, black organizations, you got to teach us how to make some money, too. Can't teach me about being Moorish and doing paperwork and filling out this, that, and third and going to their courts to defend ourselves just to keep ourselves out of prison. Because after we win our cases because we learn to keep ourselves out of prison, how do we sustain ourselves as society? We're going to wind up reverting to crime if we keep playing around. Very intelligent people are going to start reverting to crime if we don't stop playing around and start teaching something that we can use and feed our family with. Substantially, not just a little bit. We're talking about living above par. Okay? Over 60% of the people that they call Americans, white and black inclusive and everybody else, over 60% of Americans will retire below poverty criteria. That's staggering. That is a stark reality. Over 60% of people that retire in this country will be below poverty level. Do you know what below poverty level is? You don't want to know. But the coke jaw, the jaw moving left and right at the bottom of your jaw when you're talking, falling asleep while you're in the middle of a conversation, that's below poverty level. Because the only thing that's going to make you be able to escape that stark reality is drugs. You will get on drugs. If you're 50, 60-something years old and living below poverty level, will use drugs. You will be on it. It's a reality. You will need prostitution. You will need something, some stimulant to escape this stark reality. Don't set yourself up. So I suggest to everybody, because it's very rare, very rare someone finds some kind of success and actually doesn't give you little bits and pieces, but is willing to take the time out and give up the information, share it with the people. I'm not asking nobody for no money other than what it costs for me to facilitate the means to teach the class. And plus, I have to charge something because it helps you sift away with the nonsense and the people that's ridiculous to waste your time. You got to put something out there just so people can put some kind of value of it and say, you know what, it's worth. Because if you left it up to people to just come for free, less people come when I do free classes. And on top of less people coming, the type of people that do come waste your time. Because you need to try people and see if they're willing to put aside $20 as an investment for their future. Because they damn sure will pay $300 for a pair of sneakers. They definitely will pay $500 for a jacket. And they definitely will go to the movies and endorse, okay, white supremacy as they constantly keep killing black people at the very beginning of the movies. And in the worst way. We're still endorsing it, and we just make a joke about it. Ain't nothing funny about it. And on top of it, they're still hiring us to be gay in the movies. And we're still endorsing that. We're funding it. Like, and we're taking our children out to see it. So I'm like, listen, since you do that, I'm not mad at you. Hey, you've been conditioned, I've been conditioned. We all got problems. But don't sell yourself short. Make sure you make it there. August 14th, the National Black Theater, 2033 National Black Theater on 5th Avenue and 125th Street. The doors open at 2 o'clock. Be there early with a pen and a pad. I'm going to be going over in a race of information, economical information. I'm not going anywhere outside that premise. And to me, that's a spiritual event. Because if we had, oh, and that's another thing. If you're interested in joining our community, go to Young Phenom. Go to youngphenom45@gmail.com. That Gmail, I just specifically set it up just for people for this radio show and two other radio shows. If you're interested in joining our community, okay, I just created a one-acre project for the people, for the applicants that join our community, for us to build on and create affordable living and schools on top of it. I just got it between Tampa Bay, Florida, and Sarasota, and I'm bringing people out there September. I just came from a trip a month and a half ago where I took 15 passenger vehicles in a truck down there, and everybody came with me that's been learning with me on the stuff that I've been teaching or mentoring. Everyone that went down on that trip with me purchased land or a house or a timeshare. Everybody that came with me and them 15 passengers purchased something for the purposes of generating revenue, making money, and being able to put some money up in their savings. This is a reality, and I'm doing it again in September. I got some land that I'm willing to share with the community. I know how to grow food. I can grow tomatoes, okra, kale, spinach. I don't know how to grow everything. However, because of the applicants, because of the emails, there's a lot of qualified people out there that's interested in nation building and no longer just complaining about how come we don't have this, how come we don't have that. Nope, we're not talking about buying the land. We already have the land. Now it's time to show and prove. Look, you got it. It's right before you. Join. Join the community. Our community, the premise, the theme of our community is engendered around one principle. We want to encourage economical growth in our community, not through lecturing, but through application. Whenever I go buy a house or whenever somebody else in the community is going to buy a house or purchase a tax deed or a lien, we always have whoever is learning come there, be present. Watch the whole thing. Get the experience. Get the job. See how easy it is because we're scared of success. Anyway, if you're interested in joining our community, again, the reason why our community is so very important is because, number one, when you join, we make a concerted effort to make sure you can make at least five or more figures because of the information we teach you. Because we believe we'll be a whole lot more effective as a black organization if, when we sit at a round table, all the people at the round table have at least five to six figures comfortably at their disposal. It is a whole lot easier to get things done in our community if the shareholders or the members of the organization actually have the funds to perpetuate their thoughts. This is very simple information. It's very common sense, but yet we haven't really approached it from that perspective. We can't be broke and make change in our community. We have to take it to the level, dare I say, we have to take it to the level where we can send our own to school to become our representatives, our lobbyists, our senators, so we can sway judgment and have legislation pushed in our favor. Everyone else does it. Everyone else. But you need money to fund a campaign. You say, well, you want us to get into politics. We don't deal with that. Yeah, and that's why we're where we are. We don't really have a voice. You can't complain, argue, yell, and scream and get mad at people for not being swayed by your arguments and your anger when they know you didn't even fund them. You didn't pay for their education. When other people are paying for them to get in, other people are paying for their campaign stickers and their flyers and their boards and their signs and their travels, we are the last on the list because all we got is mouth, and we can walk up and down the block with Sharpton or Jesse Jackson and call it a day. Listen, if you're serious about joining the community or you really want change, hit us up, let us know what your talent is, and we'll send you back correspondence. We'll talk to you, send your phone number if you will. Young Phenom. Y-O-U-N-G, Young Phenom, P-H-E-N-O-M, 45, youngphenom@gmail.com. Again, we'll definitely know that you are the one that was on the radio and was interested in the opportunity for nation building. Again, the event is August 14th. At the National Black Theater on 5th Ave and 125th Street. It commences at 2 o'clock. Doors open at 2 o'clock. It's called Spiritual Business, featuring myself. And we're going to be going through over a number of economical routes that you may want to endeavor to go in for the purposes of making yourself more economically sound, stable, or just to generate additional money without busting too hard a sweat. Very important. If you ever invested in anything in your life, you need to invest in this lecture. You also can go to 2012res.com and learn more about the upcoming event, in addition to the pay-per-view that will be available on August 14th, 2011.
Context of White Supremacy, the website, you can visit 2012stores.com, also 2012res.com to get more information on all of the products and services from Brother Polite. I believe Justice, she is also with us, and I think she has some questions she would like to ask. Justice, if you have some questions for Justice, your line should be open.
Greetings, Mr. Polite, and everyone that's on the call. Where can normal people go for help when they experience racism, white supremacy regarding foreclosures or credit problems?
Oh, they could definitely come to us. We could give them good direction for anything that we don't deal with immediately. But in most cases, they can come to us for a matter of experience. And I have a team of legal and certified professionals. This is not a pseudoscience. This is not something that we sat here and we picked up some books and learned about some of the cliches or the loopholes in the law, which is more than welcome to. We need as much as information as possible. No one is above or beyond finding an inconsistency in the law. But for security's sake and credibility purposes, I do have a legal team of professionals that have already joined the community and already been walking with us during this course. Everything from real estate attorneys, okay, to property management companies that can give you the ins and outs based on what they've learned throughout the course of years from experiences and their years of schooling, as well as from the methodologies that I've employed. The combination of all this information, we're definitely a real good group of people to come to. We are the New Covenant Unincorporated Common Law Trust. We are the New Covenant Unincorporated Common Law Trust. You can send us the email if you had any questions or any additional comments. But we are definitely serving our community. We are definitely a medium to which in the community can diffuse the detrimental parts of this housing scam that is taking place on behalf of the oppressors perpetrated against our people.
What?
Any other questions, sister?
Yes, sir. What suggestions can you offer to help eliminate the system of racism, white supremacy?
Okay. Before, ignorance is a plays the most prominent or exponential role in white supremacy. So, that being the case, we would suggest before you enter into any contract that you go to as much as professionals as possible, particularly in our immediate folder community, because we have made the effort to specialize in the things that hinder us most in our community. And we've come definitively to a conclusion that most of our problems lie in the lack of information while believing we have a majority of the information, thus the term misinformation, because during the course of our schooling and being educated, parts were missing, and it was taught to us as though it was holistic in the same instance. That's the paradox. So what we would suggest to evade the grip of the oppressor, to evade white supremacy, first and foremost, do not enter into any contract without first paying, hiring, or consulting, having a second, a third, and a fourth look, particularly when it comes from those that are not of your own stock or those that are employed by those that are not of your own stock. We're not saying to lower your guard for anybody, but we're saying in most cases, unless where this debauchery begins and ends, it comes from people who are working in opposition to our people. And that being the case, even if a person looks like you but they are employed by the heathens, then you have to also be careful and aware, more cognizant of that. For many of us have become the devil's advocate just to get a check because of the hard times that we're living in, and our own are not really in the best position to provide jobs for our own. Let me reverse that. We are in a good position to provide jobs for our own, but we don't realize our potential. So since that's the case, a lot of us have become the meter maids, okay? A lot of us have become the ones that are hiding inside the stores waiting for you to park with the confusion signs, coming out, write you a ticket, even though we know you're coming right back to your car. A lot of us have become the devil's advocate. So we're saying do not enter into any contracts or agreements, because a big part of white supremacy is a lack of information. A big part of white supremacy is talking when you're not supposed to talk, and not talking when you're supposed to talk, okay? Signing where you're not supposed to sign, okay? And failure to sign or generate contracts of your own. Many of us don't realize that when we are put into a contract by a party, we also have the right to put them into a contract as well. Most of us don't realize when they suggest to us that their phone calls have to be recorded, that we also can suggest to them that our phone calls need to be recorded, meaning we can do the recording ourselves as well. Anyone you into a contract with, by law, they're obligated to confide in a contract of your own as well. And when they have to sign your contract, you may not understand everything written in their contract, but if you outline what you don't want to go wrong in your contract, you will find the inconsistency in their contract because they will not be willing to sign it. Because they know your contract comes after theirs, and it's a testament or confesses to the debaucherous acts and the will and the intent, the malicious intent that they have against you. So there's a lot of things that we can get into, and you can get the consultation, again, from one of our members of the New Covenant, Unincorporated Common Law Trust, or members of the Golden Ark Global Foundation. You can get this information from any one of the members of our immediate community, the certified professionals. Meaning, I'm the poster boy, I talk, I can articulate it very good, but I make sure when it comes down time for business that you're talking to somebody who got the signed, sealed approval by Mr. Whitey. So that way everyone feels comfortable at the end of the day. Not to worry about no one trying to chase me down for educating the people. We're going to keep everything legitimized under their construct. I'll reel you in, and the professionals will take care of you. But they're all of our own. Any other questions, sister?
Yes. Yes, I do have another question.
I'm with
you. What? What do you do when you are around white people who practice?
Say it again.
The question is, what do you do when you are around white people who practice racism, white supremacy?
Well, it depends on the circumstance or the scenario, okay? And it depends on your barometer for white supremacy, because I'm real tedious when it comes to determining what white supremacy is. And because of that, I can't go AWOL every time I feel like it's being practiced, because I happen to feel like just white people being alive in certain areas and living in certain communities is them exercising white supremacy. Like, when I see a whole, totally black community and I start seeing white people coming in gradually, even though I know they're coming in legally with their own divine rights, I happen to feel like they're practicing white supremacy. When I see supermarkets being erected in our communities that are not being erected in other communities, selling products in our communities that are not being sold in other communities, when I see white people practice a religion such as Islam, okay, selling us swine, knowing they won't eat swine, I happen to feel like they're exercising white supremacy. And so, to answer your question, to keep my sanity, what I do is take the time out to educate my brothers and my sisters so I can bear them in a constructive direction and bear them off the path of white supremacy that is openly and readily able and willing to consume them. And when I say consume them, I mean in the form of us becoming consumers. And to consume is to burn, which alludes to hell's fire. And that's what we are in, so long as we are in communities that we don't run. So, because of my barometer for white supremacy, the best thing I've come to realize is not to fight against them per se in a violent way, but to identify clearly how is white supremacy being employed in forums that permit the right for me to educate our people, controlled environments, so when our people leave, those seeds can be planted, and when they go back into their community, they can see it for what it is, and therefore a revolution can take place. But first, before anyone can join a revolution that in results in a resolution, they first have to know what is taking place and what is at stake. And that's the biggest problem that we have. And one of the biggest problems in our community is that people don't even think white supremacy exists in the first place. So we need a curriculum that clearly identifies it and stays away from fanaticism as much as possible so we can be taken serious. And I get fanatical, too, because that's the spirit I have. But I know I shouldn't exercise that fanaticism and forums where I want to be taken serious by people who need it the most. So education is the key for our people in controlled environments and forums where we get to our people so we can clearly outline and identify how white supremacy is being employed on a day-to-day basis. That's my answer.
While I was traveling, can I be here again? I might have pressed mute. Hello?
Yes.
Okay. While I was traveling, this white old lady said to my cousins and I, hey, stop running, and you guys can't go inside the exercise room. I was just wondering, how would you want your daughters to handle that situation?
What did the white lady say?
The white lady said, hey, stop running, and you guys can't go inside the exercise room.
Hey, stop running, you guys cannot go into what, a bathroom?
The exercise room, you know.
Oh, the exercise room.
Yeah.
Well,
and she was being, well, she said it rudely, too.
So. Well, how I teach my children is this. Stupid people do stupid things. There's no way you're intelligent, or at least at that moment, if you do something stupid. You've exercised your right to be stupid as a stupid willed person. Stupid is, stupid does. Intelligent people do intelligent things. Godly people do God things. Devilish people do devilish things. Godly people don't do devilish things. And if they do something devilish at that point, they was exercising the devil in themselves, not the God. My point for that is to make sure that my children are not consumed with so much hate that it makes them irrational. I simply explain to them, people of all races in general have the ignorance in them. And at any given point or situation, we don't know what exactly incurred or offset the practice of negativity. But one thing we know for sure is if it's in somebody, they will themselves to perpetuate that thing. So since that's the case, the best thing that I could suggest, especially to any young brother or young sister, because I know my temperament, all right? And because of my temperament, prior to me getting conscious, I was a very violent brother, and I wound up incarcerated for the fact that I was very, very violent, all right? And I learned I'm a lot more worth to my people out here on these streets, okay, teaching than incarcerated behind bars because of a lack of discipline. So since that's the case, we don't want to encourage anyone that has malicious intent to do us harm. We don't want to encourage anyone who might purposely be trying to provoke us to precipitate the type of event that will ultimately leave us at a disadvantage. We don't want to entertain the negative side of a person for the mere fact that it may end result in us being taken out of existence prematurely because we may even be set up, okay, as a consequence of our undisciplinary actions. So what I suggest to my children is to always have a level head, call a spade as the elders say, call a spade, see people for what they are and how they respond to you, but have enough sense in your mind to chalk it up to experience, record it, have a statistical review of it on an empirical data state, or sense, I should say, whereas you could say, I've experienced countless amount of times this type of instance when I interface with this type of person. On another set of instances, when I interface with these type of people, I've experienced something totally different, and be able to definitively decide on your own how you estimate a person's ignorance, if you should do it based on race, or if you should do it based on construct in terms of society, if you should do it based on neighborhood, if you should do it based on any other wide range of factors. My point being, the main thing I tell my children is to be thinkers first. Be thinkers first in any scenario or situation, because all it takes is one thought for you to, and that one thought can be responsible for you missing a lot of years of your life, like I've missed a lot of time in my life. So it's very important because people know that we are a warrior people as well as an intelligent people. And because they know that, they play on our emotions. They play on the God sense of us. They play on even our intellect, because at times I know I'm too intellectual to be challenged in a certain way. And because of that, now I've learned not to demean myself in a certain way. However, before, just to have my intelligence insulted. Like, you can be so high and mighty on your God throne, and I have melanin, and I am superior to you, that if a person should disrespect you or cut you off, and may not even have had malicious intent, it may have just been by fault of their nature because of who they are, but they probably didn't even intend to really do you harm. Maybe they don't even have that much manners in the first place. Maybe manners is not in them. Because you are so on your high and mighty throne, you may make an ill-advised decision that you may regret later on. And you know what? Other people love you. So it's not enough that you love yourself, but you have a responsibility. And a big part of responsibility is to respond to your ability. So you have to respond to your God ability when you are tried before the devil. You understand what I'm saying? If someone tries you, or someone is disrespectful to you, or someone is rude to you, you have to exercise your respondability, which is your responsibility, because your life, okay, is not only in your hands, it's in others, and you're not the only one that loves you. Other people love you too. So you can't fall for the trap. And that might seem simple. You might be saying, Brother Polite, it was just a simple statement that she said, but you don't know. It's a spirit force that rules some people too, that they don't even know what drives them or compels them to bother you. And it could be all a set arrangement to persecute you and take you away from the community that needs you the most. Because for all I know, you could be the next freedom fighter for our community, and we may never know that if you allow yourself
to be undisciplined during the time of being tested. So what I tell my children is keep your head on your shoulders and don't let no one play you against yourself. And I would tell you the same thing. If I saw you in the street and I saw you about to get upset and fall for a trap, I tell you too, listen, we need you to be 18, 20, 30 years old to contribute more to your community than to give it all up for this, I was about to say a negative word, for this butthead. Let's just call him that.
What lessons or teachings do you think should be mandatory for instructing black children? What lessons or teachings do you think should be mandatory for instructing black children?
Oh, for instructing black children. Oh, easy. Number one lesson is to be self-employed. The number one lesson is money management. It's the number one lesson. Because the lack of money can drive you to do a lot of things. The lack of money will compromise your morality. The lack of money compromises your integrity. The lack of money compels you to either one, become complacent with being a bum, or settling for less, or make you do something ill-advised, out of control, crazy, overall wacky, and even persecute your own out of jealousy. Steal from your own out of jealousy. The number one devil on the planet, all right, and this is my point of view, it's not the white man or any other shade of him. The number one devil on the planet is poverty. Now, poverty may have been conjured up by a specific race, or poverty may be used as a divisive tool for a very corrupt race. And be that as it may, if that shit should be the case, the reality is poverty is the thickest spirit force that we have on this planet today that victimizes our people overall. The lack of money is responsible for us not being able to get a better education. The lack of money has disabled us in as far as being able to get into more prominent positions of leadership. The lack of money has prematurely taken out a lot of our brothers and our sisters that are very brilliant in our community, but on account of the fact that they succumb to the ways of the spiritual and wicked will of poverty and those who advocate it, we no longer have these people at our disposal like we should have. Poverty is responsible for people killing intelligent people. Poverty is responsible for stupid people killing other stupid people. Poverty is responsible for stupid people killing people by accident. Poverty is responsible for intelligent people killing all of the above. My main influence, my main lesson for the youth is to learn how to manage money. Because it doesn't matter if you were born with a little bit of money or a whole lot of money. If you know how to use it and you know how to manage it, you can get as far as you want to go and you can open up some more doors. It's not that we worship money. We don't want to be consumed by luster in the pursuit of making money. What we have to take into consideration, how mystical, how magical, how important money is in terms of society. And if you're without it, you can only go but so far. It grants you the education you need. It takes off a level of stress. It's not to say if you get more money, you're not going to be stressed out. There comes the information, because you can have a lot of money and take in poor information. If you have the right money, you should take in wealthy information. But you have to be able to discern which one from the other, and that's based on the education that or the knowledge that is disseminated within the confines of your household, in your immediate community. And if your parents subject you, allow you to subject yourself to the ignorant, then that's going to be part of your poison. Okay? So money management to me is one of the most important things.
I've changed my answer during the course of time. Even in the last year, I thought it was something else. I thought it was more racial. I thought I've leaned more towards racial answers, okay? And prior to that, I leaned more towards cultural answers, as people would suppose. But right now, as it stands, I really understand the significance of not just money in itself, but being able to manage it, being able to keep it, and being able to have it set aside for a specific purpose, not just sitting there saying, well, it's just good in case something happens, I have the money there. No. Saving money up for a specific purpose, having a projection from one year to the next, and knowing what you intend to do with it. Okay? So that's what's the most important thing. Teaching our children money management from a very young age. And, yes, there's a number of other things. Because if you allow me to pick two things, I say health, eating right. Because no good in having a lot of money and die early anyway because you're eating bad. I say eating right. And not by other people's standards, but by what you know your body naturally caters to or genetically caters to. I would say you have to eat right. And when I say eat right, I mean stop eating the food that we fed when we were slaves. You can't talk about white supremacy and volunteer ourselves to eat slave food. If you're still eating ham hocks, mac and cheese, and things of that nature, that is the food that they fed the slaves. So why would you eat it now? Why would you dare eat the same food that the slaves ate during your time of purported freedom? You got another question, miss?
Yes. Have you ever disciplined your children physically? Have you ever disciplined your children physically?
Oh, yeah. I've disciplined my children physically. But that can only last, what? By the time they're walking and talking and things of that nature, I can only go so far. And that doesn't mean I'm beating babies with a belt. I may have asked for a hand. I may have asked for a hand to stick out and smack the hand. I don't really believe in it no more. I think it's kind of slave mentality. Like, however, I understand when parents feel that's the course of action they have to take. However, you don't want your child to become complacent, because after that, you have to almost kill them or allow them to go wild, because our children will build an immunity to beatings if there's no lesson that comes after it. So even if you're going to beat your child, I would suggest you have to have a thorough communication with them after the fact. Never leave them on a note just to beat them, because they will build an immunity to it. Then eventually they realize, oh, you're not going to kill me. You're just going to try to scare me. And then now you got an out-of-control child. I don't really agree with it no more. And the inception of my parenthood, I thought that's what I had to do, because that was the methodology employed on me. And when you become older, there's certain things you see in your parents you said you never want to be like, and you find yourself falling right into the trap again. And as I matured a whole lot more, I realized how powerful communication is in contrast to actually hitting the children. So I wouldn't suggest it, and I understand some parents who may say, look, I'll give you a little something on your backside. I understand it, but I also feel like it's like treating our children like animals in another respect. And I believe if you have a thorough and strong communication with your children, and they've been raised on pretty much the right foods for the most part, and in a conducive environment for growing your children, meaning they're not the subject of a lot of disagreeable acts, that they internalize negative images from the TV, negative music to listen to, and negative people being around, I believe all of those social factors play a significant role in the upbringing of our children, and it makes them respond to our education in different ways. So if the environment is more conducive to raise children, I find that would diffuse most, if not all, the reasons why a parent would even beat their child in the first place. So that's what I've learned. If you subject your children to destructive things, then they become destructive themselves. If you diffuse a lot of the destructive vices and images that most of the other children are susceptible and prone to, you'll find that you'll have to do very little work as far as the physical task. You should spend a whole lot more time talking than you have to do anything physical. That's just one parent's belief from our own empirical data, from our own experience. I actually feel bad for any time I've ever touched my daughter in a violent way. I feel bad for it. And I haven't even gone to the extent that my father has gone on me. However, I realized that it's criminal, because she's too sweet a being and she's too powerful and she's way too positive for me to be doing that to her. because she's not even on the level that I was on. I was a little knucklehead anyway. I was running into walls and acting crazy and coming in the house late and doing all sorts of stuff. However, she doesn't deserve it, and most of my children don't deserve it. What they deserve is a better environment for them to be raised in. That's what our children deserve. And granted they'd be given a better environment to be raised in, we'll find we won't even have to lay a hand on our children. That's what I believe.
Thank you very much, Mr. Polite, and thank you for, you know, giving more information on credit scores and foreclosures. And I just remember that my dad was talking to me about credit scores and foreclosures today.
Wow.
I appreciate you sharing more information about that, and I think you did an excellent job.
I really appreciate it. How old are you again, sister?
12.
Well, you're doing a great job, and I hope you stay on top of it. And don't let no one deter you. Your father's doing right by you. I really appreciate the job that he's doing. And thank you for your questions. You gave me a lot of insight. You teach a lot just by asking questions. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Context of white supremacy. Do you have time for to check to see if we have a couple questions from the listeners, Brother Polite?
Yes, I definitely have the time. I'm here. I'm ready.
Okay. If you are on the talk show line, *8, and I can get your questions. The person who called in from Massachusetts with a hand up. Did you have a question for Brother Polite?
Hello, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hey, hi, Gus. Hey, Brother Polite. First, I want to give you my respects, man. You're a very popular brother, not only on the street level, but all over the internet. You know, I mean, I heard so much about you, man. I seen some of your videos. I heard your voice so many times. This is one of the best shows, you know, that Gus has had since, you know, I've been listening to him. And, man, that was just buckets and buckets of information you just dropped, man. It's like 2 hours, but it was just pure info, man. Very powerful. I do agree with you, man. You know, we need to get busy living or busy dying. You know what I mean? Because I do get down on the white supremacy because, you know, we got to stay awake and know that we got people working 24/7 against us. But you cannot go around teaching somebody to be a soldier if you can't even teach them how to feed themselves. You can't fight on an empty stomach. And like you said, there can be no revolution without finance. And how are you going to get finance? You have to educate yourself, not necessarily by going to a white man's school, but going to a school where you're going to learn what's going to help you to get ahead, even if you can teach that to yourself or find a brother such as yourself to teach it to them. You know what I mean? I had a wonderful night, man, listening to you, man.
Thank
bless
you.
You know, I hope, you know, I mean, I hope the best for you, brother.
Thank you so much, brother. Appreciate you for sharing that. It means a lot to myself and my family. Family and
peace, brother. Oh, also, can I ask you one question?
I'm here.
Yeah, what do you think about the nationality thing that seems to be the talk, you know, today's talk, you know, the nationality?
Well, I love to answer that question. Nationality thing that's going on in the community is too premature. I believe the information is, for the most part, right in the exact, makes a lot of sense. But the time in which we appropriate the methodologies is where the discrepancy comes in. I feel that should be the last hope. Like, for instance, we have a lot of brothers going around driving with diplomatic plates, license plates that say they're diplomats. And they can't even get 5-10 of their brothers or sisters as part of their community. So first of all, their communities is oversaturated with men. Very little women in there, which means they should change the doctrine so it can cater to the females because they ultimately give birth to the next generation. You're only going to go over so far if you don't have no children to educate in that community. They got to start thinking in that state of mind or that sense of mind. They have to start addressing issues that cater to females that they agree with. I'm not saying they should compromise their mission or their agenda. I'm saying they have to generate the clout and the esteem that is necessary to get their female counterparts on their side. That is way too many men in contrast to females in the organization. That's first and foremost. Second of all, as far as attaching or fixing issues of sovereignty to our mission stat as black organizations or Moorish organizations or communities, we should first get some land and erect a school, erect an abode where we can exercise our spirituality, pretty much an archetype for a nation. But when a group of people are sovereign before they even get a land, driving diplomatic plates before they even have their own school or hospital, I delivered my own child. No one delivered my child. I delivered my child. My wife gave birth to my child. And we did it under our conditions, minus the halogen lights that destroy the central nervous system of the children from the time they're born, coming out of triple darkness for 9 months of conception. We understand the detriment that that poses on our children when they're born. Also, we understand what the Similac does to them. We understand that milk has 750,000 somatic cells, which is a euphemism for the word pus, and is allowed to have 20,000 live bacteria in it before the Food and Drug Administration takes it off the shelf, as well as we understand that it is allowed to be pasteurized, which is nonetheless to say radiated to prolong the shelf life of the milk. Taking all those things into consideration, how can we claim sovereignty if we haven't even claimed the right to deliver our own children, erect our own schools, okay, or even have the most important clause in being sovereign, which is to say our own land, a place or a boat where we can exercise our sovereignty. So I feel what the brothers and the sisters are doing. I think it's great and it's brilliant that we've established a means to use paperwork to generate a certain level of esteem or identity so we could be acknowledged as a specific group of people. I feel all of that is the right thing to do, but we are taking things out of context and out of appropriation. That is not one of the first things we do. It is not the prerequisite thing to do. That is something that we should do down the line when a whole lot of other things are placed. If you have a community filled with people that are still working for who they believe to be the oppressor while chanting and ranting and raving themes of sovereignty, it is a total contradiction. Okay, you cannot work a job for somebody else and be sovereign at the same time. Actually, you can, but if they wanted to come down on us for that, they really would, and it's not worth it. Because if you're not making at least five or more figures a year, what good is it being sovereign? You can't even contribute to a community such as ourselves because we've been pushed back for quite a bit of time, and we need a great deal of renovation to take place in our community. Why spend all the money on fancy license plates and nice ID cards that denote a status that we're not even due? And I don't mean that we're not deserving of the status, but on a social level, it doesn't make sense to profess that we're one thing when the application hasn't even been made. So that's what I feel about that situation.
Thank you for your opinion, brother. And before I get off the call, I just want to say that video you was talking about the brother that he got the mansion down in Texas for $16. Yeah, I saw that video, man. Whoa, that was something else, man. $16, a mansion.
Yeah.
$16.
$16. An honor
to hear you, man. Just made my night, man, for real. Peace, brother.
Peace, my brother.
Context of white supremacy. Good to hear from you again, sir. Caller in Massachusetts. The other folks that are on the line, if you have a question, *8. If you're on the TalkShoe line, if you're on the free HD line, it's *6. *6, and I can get your question on free HD. Again, if you would like to get more information, the website, 2012res.com, and if you are in the New York area, the seminar Sunday, August 14th, you will be giving out information. The new books will be available, 50th book, 51st book. Is it one more book that's going to be brand new book that's going to be coming out that
52nd?
There we go. the information on foreclosures. I think he'll be going into a lot more detail with that seminar on the 14th, that Sunday. Lots of great information. I'll give out the address again and the number in case you want to call or follow up to get more information. And that article is online about the $16 mansion. You can find it real easy. You can Google it. The address for the event is 2033 Fifth Avenue. It's at the National Black Theater. This is in Harlem, New York. Doors will open at 2 p.m. Eastern. It's going to start at 3 p.m. Eastern. And advance tickets are $20. Advance tickets, $20 for vendors. Ticket information, the number. If you want to get a pen, I'll give it out. The number, 347-496-1022. You can also dial 347-600-7066. Sunday, August 14th, 2011. The address, 2012stores.com. And you can also check 2012res.com. I will check the lines again. Again, if you're over at TalkShoe, it's *8. If you have questions at the TalkShoe site, Free HD, it is *6. *6. Excellent information. Again, as usual, from Brother Polite.
Thank you.
Wow. I'm still marinating on different parts of it. I want to make sure when I asked my question and you were giving out, you were about to go into more information about the bankers. Did I cut off any part of that, or did you get out what you wanted to share about the bankers?
Nah, it was all in the flow. There's so much information. It was all in the flow. And actually, it was the best part of the conversation because I was really going there, and you pretty much punctuated that part of the information, and it was actually better that you had succeeded and brought that up, because that was like the eureka to the information, because that's why I was repeating the same thing over and over so people can really grasp that concept that this is how they're using it against us. You know, we actually lock the deal down, and then we get the boot, and then someone walks right in there. You know, so that's, you know, it was just phenomenal because it came in right at the right point, and it was crucial because I was going to go over it 2-3 other times because that's how I teach. I repeat what I say 2-3-4-5-6 times just to make sure it's as coherent as possible before I come in with it. So the fact that you came in with it, I said, all right, good. I could just move forward because that's exactly what I was leading up to anyway. You know, ultimately, the bank is going to pay it. It's all set up because, like I said, the bank is the one that is the mortgage holder. They give you the house for $20,000, $150,000, whatever the case is. The reason why the county is going to put so much penalties on it that defy the laws of common sense, and as far as the fact that if a person is having a problem paying their delinquent taxes and they can't pay in installments, what makes us think that they'll be able to pay their delinquent taxes plus unfair hike in penalties on account of the late fees? And it's a trick question. It's not really designed for the owner to be able to pay it back. But remember, the person who puts the lien on it, on the house, pardon me, the person that establishes the lien on the house, right, they're the ones who have to be duly compensated. It's mandated by law that the person that pays the delinquent tax has to get 16% to 25% of their principal in addition to the penalties and any additional charges at the discretion of the county. Now, what's going to happen is the county understands that if a person can't pay the delinquent taxes, what makes you think that they can pay it in full in addition to these unfair surcharges? Well, they understand that the bank is not really going to allow the house to go be given away for $3,000, less than $4,000, when they sold it to the owner for $200,000, $150,000, $80,000. Why would they let the house go away by default for $3,000, $4,000? So in either or case, the lien holder is going to get their money back, and the property owner is going to be completely out of the scenario because the bank is going to pay it. The bank definitely has the money to pay it, and the bank definitely will pay the money. But that still leaves the property owner in a very precarious situation because they are totally out the picture at that point. Either way, it's not fair. Either way, it's not going to work out. Common sense tell you, in most cases, the property owner can't pay back the property taxes because if they could have, they would have paid it anyway. In few situations, the CPA didn't upgrade or update the mailing address, which happened to a wine glass. This guy, he's one of the richest people in the world. Next to Bill Gates, he's the one that owns Blockbuster. He lost $1 million house for about, I think it was $40,000 or $4,000. I think it was $4,000. He lost $4,000 in change. Two guys paid for a lien to be established on the house, and because the CPA didn't update the mailing information, the mail that the property was potential for foreclosure didn't work out. He tried to sue the county for it. He was rich. He sued the county for as much as he could, and it didn't work out because it's the law. People could come in and take your stuff for pennies on a dollar. You know, in that case, that was one of those loopholes, and of course he could have paid for it. And in that case, the mortgage was already paid for, so there was no bank included. So just by virtue of the fact that he didn't receive the mail that the house would be foreclosed on because he's so rich and doing everything else that he's doing, on account of him not getting the mail or CPA not being able to update the mail list to redirect the mail to wherever he would be at or any other person who's the power of attorney or has an invested interest in that property, because that slipped under the radar, these two guys were able to get $1 million property for $4,000. That's another situation. That's the guy who's one of the richest people in the world that happened to them. And he was so pissed off, and he was infuriated because he realized this is not fair. He lost $1 million house. He paid the mortgage for incomplete. He realized that the system is dirty. So he got duped by it. And I'm saying that to say, now this is a millionaire who went as far as trying to sue the county government because he was pissed off about it. So we should be upset about it. But right now, it's gone so far into the game trying to seek reform in this matter wouldn't work out. But what you could do is use it to your advantage. And we're going to talk about that, you know, at the lecture. Use it to your advantage because there's no reason why you should pay any mortgage on any houses from here until we'll tell you where to go, what to do, and how to do it. It's not some slick squatter's rule with kind of in the premise of what the guy did for the $16 to the $300,000 house. This is something totally different. But that was just to show you yet again, as an example, how you can literally, this system's so shady, someone works real hard to acquire or adopt a property, and here it is, Mike, come in here for pennies on the dollar and take something that most of us are under the impression that we have to have hundreds of thousands of dollars to obtain or get loans extended to us in order for us to adopt these properties. But we were going to some very, very conventional means and application to generate the type of income, supplementary, passive income, however you want to call it, additional income, to cater to our needs, wants, and desires so we can live in more conducive, more economically and spiritually sound environments for the purposes of our health and raising our children. We'll be doing that August 14th. So nonetheless, everything was right on time. So it was a blessing. I enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it thoroughly, and I definitely love the question from Baby Girl. That was very powerful.
Wonderful. We had two other folks that had a hand up for questions. Sir Anton, did you have a question for Brother Polite?
Greetings, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I didn't have a question. I just wanted to say, very informative program. Thank you, Brother Polite, for sharing all this information with us. And I'm looking forward to making this change for me personally, in order to help build our nation, you know, as a collective. So
right.
I appreciate all the information, brother.
Appreciate that. Don't forget, you can go to Young Phenom for yourself and anybody else still on the line. If they're interested in participating in the activity of the communities, in addition to even joining our community with the benefits, of course, that come with our community, they hit up the email, Young, Y-O-U-N-G, Phenom, P-H-E-N-O-M, 45, at gmail.com. We will respond in efficient time and effective times, because that email is concentrated for the purposes of responding to people who have heard me on the last three shows that I've been on. So we'll pretty much know where it's coming from. Thanks a lot again for the comment.
Sure. The person who called in from California with a hand up, your line is open. Person who called in from California, did you have a question for Brother Polite?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Yes, you can. We hear you.
Greetings, Polite. Brother Polite.
Greetings.
Yeah, my question is, I was thinking, I was reading this article a couple of days ago, and it's talking about the U.S. Department of Education sent a SWAT team, which roughed up and arrested a black male out here in California because of student loans. Did you ever hear about that?
Because of student loans or student laws?
Student loans.
No, I haven't heard of it. I've heard of a scenario like that one, but not as of recent and not in California.
Oh, yeah. And the reason why I was thinking about that, because, you know, I've been studying, like, you know, the rise of the Third Reich, Nazi Germany. And also I've been thinking about, you know, places, you know, that you know, I'm in California, and I don't really want to be caught in California when what I think is going to go down goes down.
That's right. And New York, that's right.
Right. So I was, my question is, have you been looking around the country and basically seeing some places where it would be advantageous for people to start looking into to move?
Oh, yeah. In fact, at the New Covenant, we've strategically plotted out specific points around the world where we obtain the properties to do our building. Not to say we're just going to be completely safe and evade, you know, the prosperous will of the beast man. However, that's where the economical premise comes in, because with the right amount of funding, it'll also grant us more time and more options when things change for the significant worse. And remember, when things change for the significant worse, everyone doesn't have to go along with the swing of the pendulum. You can get off and allow the pendulum to swing in a negative and hostile climate and get back on when it's time to swing into a more progressive environment. So we are just pretty much preparing ourselves to get off the pendulum when it swings into the most hostile abode and anticipate it's coming back to get back in the position where we would like to be. And what establishes that is, for instance, I'll give you one example. Everyone in the New Covenant was taught to engage in life insurance policies and affix them to our policy retirement plans. We make sure everyone has it. We educate for the purposes of sustaining ourselves and putting ourselves in the best position economically and spiritually as possible. The reason why we do this, I give you an example. Granted, you get the right type of life insurance policy and affix it to a cash and tax deferrable compensation arrangement or just a tax deferrable interest account. What will happen is, if you were to work for about 15, 20 years, let's say, 15, 20 years extended, and you are making over $30,000 a year, your children will inherit a minimum of $50,000 to $100,000. If 100 of us can do something like this, we wouldn't have to beg for reparations. By the time we pass, some 40 to 60 years from now, a lot of us won't be here. Our children will inherit, amongst them, anywhere between $5 to $10 million. That would be their reparations. And if we educate them now, and as far as how to manage their finances, and also we generate secured agreements that all the inheritors will have to allocate a certain amount of funds towards the betterment of the greater whole, the community, and have those funds allocated into an escrow account while hoping and banking on their consciousness in itself that they will use the funds the right way. But even if they don't, we still have secured agreements that in order for those children to inherit the monies from that life insurance policy, they would still have to allocate a portion of their funds, a percentage of their funds, into an escrow for the betterment of the whole community. We've granted ourselves reparations in the form of the financial legacy or the economical legacy that we left here for our children. These are different things that if this would have just took place for our generation, with the consciousness that we are being imbued with right now, okay, we would have had the finance to do something with the information. Nonetheless, it doesn't mean that we can't not sacrifice. This ain't a sacrifice. This is just pull out a policy. A lot of races are ahead of us because from the time the children are born or from the time that their parents die, they inherit wealth from many different outlets. And it's time for us to start strategizing in the same way. And I only said 100 people, 100 children that were educated properly and perpetuate the themes of the doctrine that we have taught. They will wind up inheriting amongst each other, just 100 children, $5 to $10 million. And we know we're going to go beyond 100 people. You understand what I'm saying? And everybody's not going to be conscious per se, but if enough of us live in a community amongst each other, then we could officially establish a state of communion where the children who become adults truly understand the incentive of their foremothers and forefathers that passed, as well as be very appreciative of what we left them, because we wouldn't just be leaving them with black conscious information per se. We'd be leaving them with black conscious applicable information in the form of the fiat or the money that we left there for them. So these are little ideas that are not that little at all and will take our children to the next level upon us being gone, while we also maintain while we're alive to do the best that we can. That's just an example of the security that we are setting the stage for upon our dismissal, being gone, or change in the economy. What is one thing that suffice to say, whenever the economy or anyone's economy goes at a staggering low, there's a group of people that go to an amazing high, and it's almost eerie. And that needs to be us in this particular point in time. We don't have to go down because of the decree of the media saying that we are in a woeful situation financially. We don't have to subscribe to that decree. We should just ignore that overall, because if you're black or your complexion is somewhat like mine or you're lighter skinned and considered black or you're Spanish and don't know you're black, one thing is true about our community. We've been in a recession for as long as we can remember. I've been in a recession since I was born. So this really doesn't make a difference to me, what they're talking about. I'm just now coming out of the recession. I've been in a recession for 27 years of my life, almost, all right? So, and I'm turning 28 in August. I'm just now coming out of the recession. So needless to say, we shouldn't even subscribe to a lot of what the media has saturated into our minds and hearts, because that's part of the spell. And that's part of the false indoctrination to make you feel like you have no hope. But, yes, we definitely have plans and set arrangements and abodes that we have set up outside of the territories that we feel will plague humanity the most. Yet we also understand that there's no evading the devil overall, which is why we need to get certain fundamentals right and the right amount of money set aside amongst us as a whole. That's why we want to encourage everyone that joins to take our classes seriously. Join us when we go to purchase lands and things of that nature. Learn as much as you can learn so you can be part of the council that makes decisions for the betterment of not just yourself, how you're affected, but for your children's future. We need to be able to strategically plan with the right amount of money, not strategically plan with no money. As long as everyone that's in the community has money, as opposed to these other communities where everyone pretty much doesn't really have money, and you don't really have no real professionals in the community. You just have a bunch of people. Well, it caters to low-income people who are making a little bit of money, who donate their money from time to time. No, this community doesn't cater to low-income community people for the purposes of using them because of their emotions. It caters to anyone that is black. And if you don't have talent, we're going to give you some talent. And if you don't have enough funds, we're going to give you funds. And if you do have enough funds, we want to help give you more funds. We want to make sure it's a progressive environment where more than just the leader is benefiting. We want to make the leader not the only, or make the leader the exclusive beneficiary or benefactor of the momentum of the community. So, yeah, we definitely have places in mind, and we already locked down certain key places because, like yourself, we are doing similar research, and we know what's going to befall on this side of the world as far as the evil plans that people have. For not just black people, just their own people in general, too. They're so wicked, they're wicked to themselves. You can't trust no one who's wicked to themselves as well as everybody else. Too dangerous.
Yes, sir. I agree. Yeah, I'm just. Because I see it kind of like a state of emergency. You know, I'm around the youth every day, and I definitely teach them to you know, start their businesses. I think that that's extremely important. From the age of 9, I feel like, you know, they should have a business at 9. So, yeah, I teach that, and I teach them basically on some survival. You know, just being strong. But what kind of window do you think from your perspective and your view, how long, I mean, or is that something that you feel like maybe we shouldn't be?
Well, I know we have our plan caters to 3 to 5 years for everything to be to play a pretty instrumental role as far as how we perceive our future. We have a projection that takes us from 1 to 5 years, the last 3 to 5 being the most crucial, but that's the projection. All the things that we, as far as building plans, as far as the erection of our schools and other infrastructures, the domes that we're building on the lands, particularly the one in Florida, where it is hurricane resistant as well as fire resistant. It will not crumble. They're earth domes. And again, we have certified contractors, and we've already done or establish the research for the zoning rules to make sure that the infrastructure conforms to the zoning rules of that county, so we don't work backwards and have to break stuff down. You know, because we've learned from in the past where some of our leaders have acquired or adopted property and went through that topsy-turvy type of issue. So we have our evacu walks that we do in New York, very powerful evacu walks, how to escape from New York walking. Show people how to get from as far as Brooklyn all the way to the Bronx and how to get out, and knowing where the water is at, where you don't want to be at, why you want to be by the water at times and why you may not want to be by the water sometimes, what is the highest altitude that you can find in New York that is the safest, meaning upon flooding, because you're by the waters, you won't want to be at the place where the highest altitude is, not the lowest, and how to get there in the walk route. Preparedness is everything. Preparedness is everything, because once you prepare, you don't have the shock that comes with the ignorance. As an end result of being ignorant, shock comes to you, and you could be a threat to yourself or someone else. So this is why we're selling the medical packs and the liquid Band-Aids and the life straws that filter the water upon sucking through the straw, because the water may be contaminated, and you may not have a water filter at your disposal as far as the sink is concerned. These are little things that we got to learn. Like, the average family, if you ask them, in the event there was an emergency, phones were knocked out, and it was hard to communicate with each other, and somebody's at work, somebody's at the house, and someone's babysitting or hanging out with a boyfriend or girlfriend, does the family know in emergency situations where to meet up? Do they have at least 3 places where they should meet up in the event of emergency situation? You know what we'll find? Most of us never even thought that far. These are the type of issues that we tack on to our agenda, because anything can happen. It can be an act of terrorism. It can be a natural disaster. It can be an unnatural disaster. Nonetheless, no one is above or beyond them. And since no one is above or beyond them, we need to be prepared, because those who are not prepared can pose as the biggest threat to the people that they're trying to save, just out of a lack of information.
We are at war. The website,
you're
again,
ready to know.
The website, 2012stores.com. You can also 2012res.com. Real pleasure to have him on the program. Third visit, Brother Polite.
Third visit. Getting stronger and stronger.
We definitely look forward to having you back on again and continuing to support your effort. And thank you so much for coming by and sharing the information. It's always, you know, a pleasure to learn from you. And, yeah, hope folks, if you're listening in the New York area, get out there on Sunday, August 14th. Support. You can get copies of the new work, and lots of information, I think, will be available Sunday, August 14th. Visit Brother Polite, Harlem, New York. Should be outstanding.
Thank you.
Thank you. The pleasure is ours. We will be in touch soon. Listeners, thank you as well. Two programs today. We will be back the beginning of next week. Just check the front page for the program time. Has been a pleasure for Justice. If you're there, if you want to sign out for the listeners, again, visit the website, 2012stores.com, 2012res.com. Justice, anything before we go? Oh, okay. Try again. Yep, we can hear you.
Okay. Okay, bye. Okay, yeah, just good night, everyone. It's late over here, 9. And about to have a muffin, get ready for bed. And, yeah, everybody have a good night. And bye to the guests and everybody that's on the call. And, of course, Beth.
Context of white supremacy, yes. Brother Polite. Justice, thank you so much. And King Simon, thank you again, King Simon, for a big support of the program. We will be back beginning of the week. Cows, signing up. Thank you.